A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Real Salt Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation. Care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
What's up, Scott Mitchell?
Well, it is now Wednesday, which is hump day. Means it's right in the middle. Get over this little hump here, and it's all downhill from here.
Oh, that's how you took
hump day? How it works. Right. Yeah, it's getting over the hump.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, that's where we are, and that's where you are.
Well, technically, we're here, so you don't count today, so really it's actually tomorrow.
That's what I used to do with my birthday.
Yeah.
Well, we're there. Yeah. It's Christmas, yeah. Basically.
Right.
Okay? How many days till Christmas? We're there.
Yeah.
I mean, it is tomorrow, but
that's how you got yourself through training camp.
Yes. Oh, that's how you told yourself?
Yeah. You can't count today because you're already here, so it's actually tomorrow.
What was the – okay, like when you're a pro – because I remember when I was in high school and just all growing up, and you're doing conditioning and stuff, right?
Right.
And it's not easy being the lineman doing the conditioning, okay?
Of course. Got all that extra weight.
But here's the thing. And when you're a pro, is the conditioning like brutal? Like I think under Don Shula, I feel like it'd be brutal.
The easiest conditioning in my entire career playing football was in professional football.
See, and that's what I think, because at that point you guys are you're killing yourselves. Like in the off season.
Most guys run a lot in practice.
So they're
during practice.
They're going after it.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing too, that you go, man, these guys, they're in really good shape. And then you go, well, how much conditioning are they doing? And you go, now if you get to this point, you don't have to ask to be conditioned. You're just there.
Yeah.
Most people. Unless you're Jamarcus Russell. And it's like.
There's this thing about coaches. They feel they have to torture you with conditioning.
High school coaches.
High school
for sure.
Coaches, yeah.
I can remember.
And I experienced that. The hardest for me, and I had some hard-nosed high school coaches. That they loved the torture of up-downs.
Another gasser.
Yeah. The hardest I had it, though, was when I was in college. Jim Fossil was brutal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and his conditioning.
See.
18 half-gassers every Monday.
See, and we used to do the thing where you do the gassers, and, like, if we were really, like, on his bad side, and, you know, like, you're doing it by quarters. So it'd be, like, fourth quarter, you know, and you're dying, right. You know. And at that point, the timing kind of goes out the window because they're trying to be nice to the fat guys. And then when he would go, it's overtime, like, you'd go, okay.
You want to kill
your coach. Hates us.
Yeah.
I hate him. Anyway. That's not what we want to put you through today. We
want it to be easy. You just ran, you jogged on Monday like a mile.
Right.
Maybe it was like a mile and a half.
This is at the U. This is
in Utah.
No,
this was when I was in college.
Oh, okay.
That was conditioning on Monday. Pretty much every NFL team. It's like just break a sweat.
Jog a mile.
Go jog a mile, whatever.
Jogging a mile. If you would have asked me to jog a mile to start practice off as a lineman in high school, I would have been like, I really am considering quitting this team.
And then Tuesday was your day off.
Okay.
Wednesday, you ran three gassers after practice. Thursday, you ran three gassers after practice.
Friday's a walkthrough.
That was the end. Well, right. Friday wasn't a walkthrough practice. Friday was a non-padded practice.
Right. Friday was the shorts and the helmets.
But you did not condition.
Right. Yeah, that was kind of the vibe.
And then Saturday was walkthrough.
Okay.
And that was your week. That was it.
Okay. Well, it's conditioning day today, everybody. So here we go. We're going to kick things off. We're just going to go right at it. It's going to be brutal. We're going to get through this together. And at the end, you might hate us during the middle of it, but at the end, we're all going to be better for it. So here's where we're going to kick things off. It's The Cut right at the top of the show.
They're The unquestioned. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
All right, the cut presented by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, RSL, and the Utes all trust. Visit uofuhealth.org today. That's uofuhealth.org. Proud sponsors of The Cut. So anytime you get an alert that says, hey, breaking news, effective immediately, then my interest is peaked. So the Pac-12 had a, hey, guess what? There is some breaking stuff here, and this is effective immediately. And we're going to get into the details of it. But as of right now, as of today, you will no longer have the winner of the South and the winner of the North in the Pac-12 division top teams be just your automatic play-ins of the Pac-12 championship game. It's not going to be a South rep and a North rep automatically.
That's huge.
It has now gone
to... It's a huge deal for the conference.
Huge. Huge deal. And it's great for football, to be quite honest. And it's just another step before we get to the point where we're not going to have divisions. But that being said, the big news is today, you will not have it just divided by the North champion, the South champion. It's going to be best conference winning percentages. The two best winning conference percentages are going to play each other. So you could have two North teams, could have two South teams.
Right, and I love that. I know we're going to get into it later. Are we going to get into it later?
We will, yeah. but like I just want to make sure
we're
not...
You just want to break the news here.
Well, and it's not, you know, we're not trying to hide anything. We're not going to... We'll roll it out later, but I'm just saying that I want to make sure everybody knows it's on our radar. It's an amazing thing. And interestingly enough, we went back and kind of looked at the history of it. And there are some teams, there are some changes that would have been made in some more recent Pac-12 championship games, including one year that Utah would not have played in the conference championship game.
I just like it because it shows that the Pac-12 is being proactive.
Like, they have golf.
They're not waiting for stuff. They're right. Just going, this is a good idea. This is a great idea. And they don't have to sit there for years and years and years, and they just go, let's implement.
Yeah. So that's so where we're
really
at today.
Like, yeah, nice.
I want to get into a ranking that I saw, and I want to see. I want to get what your vibe is. So there's this ranking of the top Power 5 coaches in the country. And because BYU is on the outside of the Pac-12 or of the big or of the Power 5 conferences right now, but are kind of just, you know, they're waiting for this thing. They're pending, right? They're booting up to be a part of those Power 5 teams. I want to know if we can put Kalani, if we could insert him, or if he deserves to be inserted into that top 25 discussion as well. So I'm going to go look through some of these coaches, and you tell me where we're at. And I'm going to start from the top. Nick Saban is the number one coach in Power 5 coaches. That's an easy one because he's the number one coach of all time.
Can I just stop you right there?
Yep.
Okay. You just take your top seven guys here.
Yeah.
They're all garbage.
What are you talking about?
Except for Nick Saban.
Okay.
Okay.
Why is Kirby Smart garbage?
Well, let me just tell you why Nick Saban's really good.
How is Dabo Sweeney garbage?
Let me tell you why Nick Saban is the very best coach. It's really simple. Nick Saban gets all the best players. You know what he does with them? He actually makes them better. When players leave Alabama and they go on to the pros, they actually become pretty good pros, too exceptional. And a lot of these other programs,
they're just churning out guys who have a lot of stars, and they're just kind of babysitting them.
Ryan Day, I mean, what Jim Harbaugh said where he started on third base, I mean, you could say that pretty much with all of these coaches here. And what have you really done with it? I mean, what Nick Saban's done, and I just get more and more impressed with a guy I don't really like in Nick Saban. But he has really done it the right way. And he pushes these players to excellence, and they are taught, and they develop fundamentals. They develop great habits of like practice habits, physical habits, game, you know, they don't just show up and out-athlete you.
Well, and people just assume, too, well, Nick Saban gets all this talent. That's why he's that good. But there's more to the story.
Yes. Like, all these teams get really good talent. All of them do. I mean, the difference is just how they train and how they develop players at Alabama. I think it's different.
Let me just get you straight then.
Do you want to know
Smart?
Do you want to know who should be number two?
Dabo Sweeney three. Clay Helton.
Clay Helton is not even at USC. He's number four. like Clay Helton shouldn't even be in the top 25. Clay Helton took USC and basically dismantled it, destroyed it.
Okay.
I mean, you talk about the fall of Rome, the fall of Troy. Like the Trojan horse rode in the name of Clay Helton, and he totally.
Oh, it's not Clay Helton. It's Lincoln Riley.
Oh,
it just said USC. It said Clay Helton next to it. I'm going. What is Jeremy smoking over here? Clay Helton. Where is he now? Southern Georgia Southern, right? Yeah.
All right. Not
a Power Five team.
Yeah.
Not yet, though. No. I mean, they could be invited.
But here's where Kyle Whittingham goes, in my opinion. Number two.
So he's eight on the list. That's why you said the next seven. You said one through seven are garbage. Two through seven are garbage.
Okay.
So Kyle Whittingham should be number two. Not that there's any biases that work into this, Scott, but please explain why he jumps over. Let me tell you the group again. Brian Kelly, seven. Ryan Day, six. Jimbo Fisher, five. Lincoln Riley, four. Dabo Swinney, two. Kirby Smart, who just won the national championship over Nick Saban, my friend.
Kirby Smart may be – no.
Okay. Because he talked himself out of it.
No. Here, Dabo Swinney, no. Lincoln Riley, no.
I love that you call him Dabo. Listen,
I don't care what I call him. You all know who he is. All right? He's at Clemson.
Hey, Dabo.
We understand who he is.
Hey, Dabo.
Quit interrupting me. Lincoln Riley, what did he do at OU? Here's what these coaches do. Brian Kelly, we sit here and talk every year about how overrated Notre Dame is. And everybody loves Notre Dame. Everybody loves Notre Dame.
That's not true. No, not very many people like
Notre Dame. Oh, no, they do. Notre Dame is the most spoiled, pampered program in all of college football. Period. They get more passes. They live off of different rules than anybody.
A little bit of the Yankees, right? Where they're like
1,000%. And he's at Notre Dame. Like you should be winning national championships every year. When you're at Ohio State, you should be competing for a national championship. With the kind of talent you get, Ryan Day may be the.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
The Clay Helton of Ohio State. Like, he's not really doing anything to really.
He won the Rose Bowl
Jimbo
last year.
Fisher,
not bad, right? He's won the Big Ten a couple of times. Come on.
I understand. Right. And here's what happens to these coaches, okay? Same thing with Harbaugh. Same thing with. They all go to the college football playoffs. And what do they do when they're there? They lose. I may keep Dabo Swinney in there. But I'm not keeping – Jimbo Fisher gets the best college football recruiting classes at Texas A&M.
Scott, that's exactly why he should be on this list because
they don't
A&M,
do anything with it. They get the best players and they don't do anything. That's my point. Nick Saban
Scott,
gets
Texas
the best
A&M,
players and he does something with it.
Texas A&M is relevant in a state where the team up the street from College Station to Austin, it's about an hour and a half drive. And let me just tell you right now, Texas A&M is like a low second tier team in comparison to Texas. And Jimbo Fisher has put Texas A&M, when he took that job, I remember thinking, this is kind of a dumb move by him. He just left Florida State to go to Texas A&M. Maybe it's because I grew up in a place where, you know, people didn't like the Aggies where I grew up. I mean, it was like, it was Texas and like some spattering of A&M fans and people are like, A&M's garbage. But Jimbo Fisher, I know that there might be this thought of, they're underperforming compared to the talent that they bring in there. Jimbo Fisher brings talent to Texas A&M, and they're really, really close.
But that, but he, you
they beat
just,
Alabama last
you
year.
You just made your own argument.
They beat Alabama last year.
What did they get at the end of the day? They didn't get anywhere. None of them got anywhere. When you're a coach that gets less talent and makes more of less talent, I'm saying you were asking me about Kalani Sitake. Kalani Sitake has it harder than Kyle Whittingham. Because not only is he not a Power 5 school, but he's also a religious school that has pretty stringent requirements on its students.
Academic-wise, too.
On top of the honor code. And to do what Kalani Sitake's done at BYU is remarkable. It's far more impressive than any one of these guys. The same thing with Kyle Whittingham at Utah.
So what about Luke Fickell then out of Cincinnati, right? You're a Cincinnati guy.
Same kind of thing. Put him on the map like crazy. Same kind of thing. That's where coaches are really coaching. That's to me what I think is a great coach. When you go into a program and you make it better than what it was before, and you do it through the program that you bring, the way the athletes are developed, and whether you win or lose.
I'm here for this TED Talk. I mean,
you can't tell me places like UCLA. Like these are schools like they don't have the barrier that Utah or BYU or Cincinnati has. It's a name. It's well respected. And USC is the same way. I'm not sold on Lincoln Riley yet, but I just wasn't overly impressed with Lincoln Riley at Ohio or Oklahoma. Like he got them to a place, but they weren't a complete team.
Developed a lot of really good individual quarterbacks.
Offensive, yes.
Right.
Explosion.
So, but now take some solace in this, Scott. The very first non-blue blood coach on this list is Kyle Whittingham. Like, he's the one that gets the first recognition of not being on one of these teams that is the very, very, very top of the names of college football.
Brian Kelly at LSU. Brian Kelly should not be.
Why is he not on this list?
He is. He's the seventh.
They won 10 games at Notre Dame in 6 out of the last 7 seasons.
Who do they play?
Like a lot of really good teams.
And they
Scott.
Really don't. They don't play. They play.
Okay.
They play. Don't tell me USC is a good team because they're not. They weren't.
Now, USC is not a good team.
No.
I have a real hard time because we haven't seen enough out of Lincoln Riley. Right? Fine. You can have that. Kyle Whittingham should be on the list. Jim Harbaugh is number 9 behind Kyle Whittingham. Coming off of the Big Ten title. So there you go. You win the Big Ten.
Now Jim
Climb
Harbaugh
up
is the biggest disappointment of all the Power Fives. This is a guy that got all the players again, Alex.
Now,
this is Michigan. This is one of the top programs in the country. And you can't win at Michigan. You can't find a way to beat Ohio State. Fine, they beat them this last year. And then they were garbage in the playoffs. Terrible.
They were bad. Another guy that should probably be higher than he is on the list and has done less with more, I mean more with less, Mike Gundy, number 10 at Oklahoma State.
I would agree with that.
He's one of those guys that Oklahoma State is an afterthought, right?
In Oklahoma it is.
Not just in Oklahoma, but like in
everywhere.
That entire part of the country. Like it is an afterthought, and Mike Gundy won 12 games with them last year, and he is every year putting them in a position to be able to win basically every game.
Would Texas – and Oklahoma leave the Big 12, and everyone goes, there's no programs now. I mean, that's what people are saying. It's like there's no marquee program. And so that's the respect or that's the view people have of Oklahoma State.
But here's the thing, though, because after we just say that, 10, 11, 12 on the list are Oklahoma State, Baylor, Iowa State, three teams that are going to remain in the Big 12 and are going to be really good teams. I think Baylor and Oklahoma State are going to be really good teams basically every year. They're going to be a hard team to beat every stinking year. Baylor was set back off of some really bad stuff that happened at that school. They were terrible when I was growing up. The program turned it all the way around.
Had some bad things going
they got,
on.
But, yeah. And then they had a Heisman Trophy winner, and they got to the spot where they're getting into these huge bowl games, and they're in this discussion, and they're right there. Dave Aranda change things there. And so if you're looking at it and you go, yeah, none of these teams are that important. I mean, these Big 12 teams are not that good. BYU's going into a weak conference. But Texas and Oklahoma, you couldn't even name their coach right now. if you're driving along, most of you, right? You go, I couldn't even tell you who's coaching Oklahoma. That's why. So Oklahoma, blue blood program, no coach to be seen anywhere on this list because, and if you were to put Kalani Sitake on this list, if you were just look at this top 25, NC State's Dave Doran is on this list at 25, Mel Tucker 24, PJ Fleck, the man with the vest and the ties at 23 for Minnesota. Sam Pittman had a heck of the last couple of years with Arkansas. I don't know why Pat Fitzgerald's on this list at 21. I think it's just because he does more with less, high standards at a school like Northwestern. But again, if Northwestern is doing well, normally you look around and go, yeah, the Big Ten's not doing that great. North Carolina with Mack Brown. That's just like a throwaway, I think. Because they did not have a great year last year.
They still think Mack Brown is a Texas winning national championship.
No, I know. They just see Mack Brown and go, great guy. Hey, but he's an elder statesman. He's like head coach emeritus. And so they go, yeah, throw him a bone. Mario Cristobal should not be number 19.
Where should he be?
He should be a little further down the list. Put him at 22, 23, maybe even out of the top 25. He just went to a new school, and I don't think he's as good as everybody thinks that he is. Kalani Sitake, if he were in a Power 5 program right now, probably would be in that slot between like a Lane Kiffin and Mario Cristobal because of what he's doing with – now, but that being said, he goes to the Big 12, and you might see BYU's record go totally south, and you have to kind of reset and see where this team is. But I think that Kalani Sitake has turned this program around to the point, and they're close enough to being a Power 5 discussion team – that you could look and go, hey, Luke Fickell's in that same category, right? About to be a Power 5 coach, but has done right. Power 5 things.
The problem, I think, with this whole list is the school. I think the schools create bias.
The schools have a background,
right?
They have a legacy that don't have anything to do with the coach's name next year.
I don't think Mel Tucker's even in the top 25 yet.
I'm not sure if James Franklin at Penn State should be on
right.
this list.
Right. I mean, you know, Pat Fitzgerald, maybe it's just all the Power 5 schools they could find that have decent coaches. But, yeah, I think there's some other coaches that have done a much better job than these guys, actually.
I think Kyle Whittingham at number 8, after – all these programs like Alabama, Georgia, Clemson, USC, Texas A&M, Ohio State, LSU, then Utah, that's a massive nod of respect because the things he had to do to get into that to that spot right there, because last year, I'm looking at the list from last year, and Witt was, Witt was number 15 last year. So he moved up considerably, and the team did. So yeah. There you go. All right. We'll come back. We got more to talk about today. Scott, I do think it's interesting. Everybody on this list is garbage except for Nick Saban and Kyle Whittingham. Goodbye.
You stink, and I don't like you!
Who are these guys? Well, Kirby Smart, you won a national championship, and you think you should be on a list? Get out of here. Never mind that he beat Nick Saban in route to do it. But all right, we'll take the break. What are the games that are going to be so huge for the Pac-12 this next year? We'll list out some of these teams with local ties and even in the Pac-12. That are going to be really, really key for this conference next season. We'll come back. More to go right here. Unrivaled continues 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5, 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
The mishmash of music there for a minute. Love it. Hey, we got lots going on in the program. And so the PGA Championship's going on, of course, this weekend. I'm not a betting man. I don't do it. I just don't do it. Like, I'll go to Vegas sometimes, put like $20 on red. Win or lose, I just walk away after that. You know, hey, fun, I found $20. Or, well, I paid $20 to just walk away and lose. I'm prepared to lose the $20. There's a dude who put 20 grand on Tiger to win the PGA Championship.
Yeah, 60 to 1.
So he'd win $1.2 million. But the reality is he's going to lose $20,000.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. I would love at least, man, I would love to.
I'd love to meet the gambler that actually.
Well, like, what are you seeing here, buddy?
That actually makes money.
Is, you just wanted to be the guy that an anonymous dude who put $20,000 down on Tiger to win the PGA Championship at 60-1. So there you go. I mean, you win $1.2 million if Tiger wins. That's amazing. But the reality is Tiger Woods is not going to win the PGA Championship. So sorry.
I don't know.
Stop.
He's not limping anymore. He's better. He's not limping. Look, if anybody could do it, Tiger Woods could do it. Tiger Woods could win the PGA. I'm telling you, Tiger Woods is going to win. He's going to win another major before he's done.
John Rahm is now 12-1, and Scottie Scheffler is now 11-1 to win this thing. Those guys are the favorites, and those are not very good odds, even for them. So this is a tough tournament to win. So I'm just saying that the guy who put $20,000 down on Tiger to win the tournament, he must treat that $20,000 the way I do $20. He must have enough money to treat the $20 to me is $20,000 to this guy.
Right.
That must be the kind of person that it is.
See, I wouldn't.
Which means that the $1.2 million actually doesn't mean that much either.
I wouldn't want to put $20 down.
$20?
No.
On Tiger, you mean?
No.
Because you know you'd lose it.
No.
Oh.
No, because you don't get that much money.
So $20 would be $120 for you, right? Is that what we're talking about? No.
It'd be
$1,200. You'd get $1,200 back.
For putting down
$20. Ooh, not bad. I'm going to call somebody after this. The spring sale continues.
Who are you going to call?
I don't know.
The Ghostbusters? Is that who you're going to call?
Everybody says they've got a guy, but I don't want to call their guy.
People do not gamble.
They're like, where do they live? Oh, in another state. His name's Guido. And you go, no, I'm out. I'm not doing this. The spring sale continues at Davis Vision. Time to ditch those glasses or contacts, fellas. Call Davis Vision today. Ask for the spring special. Save $1,000 right now off of LASIK. Call Robin, 801-253-3080. That's 801-253-3080. Check them out online, DavisVisionMD.com. DavisVisionMD.com.
Do you know why I hate Luka?
I thought we determined yesterday we don't hate him nearly as much because
he beat Devin. You know why? Because he doesn't look like he's trying that hard. Like, really, yeah. And he always gets open. And then you know what he does when he gets
makes
open?
Makes it.
He makes the darn shots. This is my gripe about the Utah Jazz. They don't have anyone that can do that. They don't have anyone that comes into the building and go, uh-oh, the Jazz have X, and we just can't stop him. We need someone who just cannot be stopped. Night in and night out.
It's tough, too.
Where is that guy? And he's not a unicorn.
Right.
He exists. He's out there.
But, I mean, Luka put all the work in, right? Except for it just doesn't look like it.
Right.
That's why you were talking about Larry Bird, I think, yesterday and how – was it – you said, I know who he is. He's Larry Bird.
Yeah, totally.
Because Larry Bird's easy shooting, he looked like he wasn't trying that hard.
No.
His shot is so specific to him. You could see that Larry Bird shot and you'd go – holy cow, it's just going to go in. If he's in the corner, it's done. It's in.
There's a video of him where he's trying to explain his shooting. And he goes, I don't put the ball back over my head because I can't see it where it's above my head. And he shoots it and he makes it. He was demonstrating how not to shoot and he still made it.
He goes, well, that's
and
a bad example.
And he goes, I just make it.
Sorry, I don't know.
Yeah. He's like, I can't miss.
He's like, here's how you don't hit a home run. Oh, shoot, I hit another home run. Yeah. So I look at a guy like Luka and I go, it does look kind of effortless. He has a little bit of he's 23, isn't he?
He's young.
Yeah. That's why I don't like him.
Young and a little dumb.
He's not
like this cut.
No, I know.
See,
that's the thing. You see Giannis and you go, oh, look at that. Look at Giannis.
Yeah.
He's a cut dude. He looks like an Adonis.
Kind of look at everyone else in the NBA except for like Zion. You know,
Nikola Jokic just won the freaking MVP again, and that guy looks like he plays a Russian villain off of a movie where he's like,
maybe there's something to being soft and supple.
Okay, you know what? New name of the show. Hey, type it up. Soft and supple.
Soft and supple.
3 to supple. 7 p.m. on the Zone Sports Network.
Luka Doncic.
Don't ever say supple on these airwaves ever again. It's supple. Disgusting. Yeah, it's one of those words I don't like.
Yeah, it gets worse the more you say it.
I know. Don't say it. So we're looking at this list of Pac-12 games across the board, and now that they've made the announcement today that that the Pac-12 is going to be playing a championship game not based off of North and South Division winners, but now the top two highest winning percentages in conference play. And you're like, well, would that change that much? Yes, it would. So, but the biggest games that they have right now on the Pac-12 schedule, good local tie-ins too, Utah and Florida. First one right off the bat.
It's really kind of one of those games that you go, this sets the tone for the whole conference. Is the conference really serious about having a playoff contender? And those early season games out of conference with big schools, they kind of set the tone. Oregon did it a year ago. This is that game.
See, my brother lives in Florida, and he's like, I'm going to that game. I'm definitely going to this game. I go, that's awesome. Because the reality is, this is an SEC team that is got a brand-new coaching staff, and they're trying to prove themselves, right? So they know exactly who's coming into town. They know that the Pac-12 champion, Rose Bowl, barely losing to Ohio State team is coming into the Swamp the very first week. And they know that they probably looked and said, hey, there may have been a time where they could look and go and not take Utah seriously, but there's no such version of that now. Utah gets taken seriously now. Until they're not Pac-12 champions anymore, they're going to be looked at seriously by every team that they play. And Florida's going to be no different. And so there's going to be – and you're on the road. I mean, that's the thing is they're playing at the Swamp. If they win that game,
pray
at the
that
Swamp,
this is a night game. Pray that this is a night game.
You think it will be?
I hope so.
You're saying that because you have to be there at the booth.
Oh, I don't care about that.
It's going to be hot as heck. No, because the AC will kick on. If Bill opens a window, you go, I'm not your friend anymore.
No, the humidity, I love humidity.
Oh,
I love playing in humidity.
Right, you've...
I just know the challenge. Look, Utah is a better team than Florida. And we talked to Yogi Roth yesterday, and he says it takes 18 months to build culture in a program, right? That's what everybody's saying these days.
Right, and he was saying in reference to Lincoln Riley. But
to Lincoln Riley at USC.
Even more so down in Florida.
Florida's dealing with the same thing.
Yeah.
And they probably don't have the same athletes that they're even getting at USC. I mean, Florida – so really the only – like leveling the field thing here is humidity. It's just the weather. And if it'll just, because Utah will go, whew, man, our energy is just soaked.
BYU at Oregon. This is one that they've put down as the biggest games in the Pac-12 for this year. And it's second on the list. BYU at Oregon. They put just 12 games on this thing. And they went through the full Pac-12 schedule. And they thought that this one was a very interesting one. Now, Oregon is playing Georgia right at the front end of the season. But I think that they look at that and they go, that doesn't feel like a W. That doesn't feel like it's as closely contested. BYU going up to Oregon, here's what the write-up says. BYU is no joke. Jaren Hall, the Cougars quarterback, finished last season 15th in the country in QBR, ahead of guys like Hendon Hooker and Will Levis. The offensive projects should be, or the offensive prowess of the Cougars should be very good this year. It will test Oregon. A 1-2 record coming out of a non-conference slate could look very, very bad for Dan Lanning because they're coming off of possibly losing at Oregon. I mean, at Georgia, which they probably are going to, or down at the Georgia Dome. And then if they lose to BYU there at home, that's not a good start for Dan Lanning.
Autzen Stadium is a very tough place for people to play.
Yeah.
The Oregon folks will be excited.
Hey, but you just
this
said
this will be early on.
18 right. months to make culture.
No, I know. And that really is a thing. And that's the other thing with Oregon. You know, maybe they're a year away from really making it happen and really having everything gel together. BYU is going to be formidable, and BYU could potentially go there early on in the season. I think culture and developing a program is there's a chance for early season losses by these big time programs like Oregon, like USC.
Well, the reason they put this on here, the BYU game was over the the Oregon-Georgia game was because Georgia is looked at like, I mean, they're a 12.5 point favorite right now, so that just doesn't feel like a win for Oregon. This one is BYU and Oregon are much more closely contested, and so you have to. It's like you better win that one, especially because it looks like you're going to be coming off of a loss at Georgia.
You'll know a lot about Oregon though playing at Georgia. You're going to learn a lot about Oregon, even regardless of what happens.
I don't understand this one.
This one's a stupid one. We shouldn't even talk about it.
I think it's funny because no. Here's why we should talk about it. Because Lincoln Riley is just, they're begging to talk about this guy. So much so that they put the USC and Oregon State game as one of the more important games going into or for the season for the Pac-12. Not just USC, for the entire Pac-12. They said if they and here's why I think you should care, Scott. Because your whole thing is imagine USC and Utah playing in Salt Lake City as single-digit ranked teams. Game day would be there, all these things. But they said the possibility is they could be heading into this September 24th game against Oregon State in Corvallis against a pretty good Beaver team.
I don't think this is the tough game for USC. I think Stanford is.
You think Stanford's more difficult than Oregon State?
Yeah. I do.
What?
And this one, and Stanford's on the road as well.
Utah's back on the list on these 12 games with Utah at UCLA. That's a good pick because
UCLA might be Utah's toughest game this year.
I hope so. I hope UCLA is a good team.
Yeah.
I hope that they supplant USC at least for the time. Because I think that they have all the pieces there. And Utah needs a decent team out of the South to look even better, make that schedule look even better.
Well, UCLA is going to start things off with gangbusters, though.
What do they have?
They have Bowling Green, uh-huh. Alabama State, South Alabama, then a road trip to Colorado.
Oh, my gosh.
Then they're going to face Washington and then Utah.
So, hold on. How many directional Alabama schools are they playing that aren't Alabama? Bowling Green, Alabama State, South Alabama. Those are your first three games at home. Who set this schedule up, Chip Kelly?
Yeah, that's
why you look at UCLA and go.
So you can't read into what UCLA is based off of early season success.
Until after they play Utah.
No.
That's why this game's a big one.
Which actually plays well for a team like Utah. When you're not up against the speed and kind of it hurt Utah a couple of years ago when they actually went to USC and they'd played all these really easy non-conference games and all of a sudden the speed of USC was just a little bit much for them. Possibly something like that could happen at UCLA.
Part of the reason they put this as such a big game is because they're supposed to be 5-0 after that that run of teams. So if they can beat Utah, that would actually be maybe the biggest win in Chip Kelly's
time. It would be a big
time.
Game. No question, yeah.
Even bigger than the 62-point the 62 points they put up against USC last year, because that USC team was garbage. Washington State at Oregon State, fine, whatever. USC at Utah obviously made the list. This is not just the battle for the South at this point. This is now going to be the battle for who could possibly be a Pac-12 champion.
We'll know who
USC is by then.
Yeah. These two teams are undefeated, and potentially they could be when they go into this game. You're looking at College Game Day is going to be here. It's going to be the highlight of the schedule. It's going to be it could be a game of the week. This might be the biggest game in all of the Pac-12 in the regular season, period, if you ask me.
Could you imagine?
Especially now that conference record matters above everything else.
Yeah. Utah at Oregon, November 19th. That's the last Utah game tied into this schedule, the most important games on the Pac-12 schedule this year. Here's what's interesting about this. It's not just, the potential to be – I mean, they played each other twice last year. It wasn't even close. So how – and then they've got to wait all this time, almost a year since they faced them at the for the first time here in Salt Lake and then in the Pac-12 championship game, neither of which were close. So they could be playing this game and then possibly aiming for another rematch in the Pac-12 championship.
Late in the season, attrition's the thing, right? Are you healthy? Are you fresh? Are you worn out or mentally, physically? And that's really going to play into this game. Where are these teams physically? Where are they mentally at the latter part? And it'll be a big key to who wins.
All right, let's take the break here. We'll come back. More to go around the corner. When we return, we've got our What Are the Odds, a Wednesday edition of What Are the Odds Around the Corner. Don't want to miss it. Stay with us. Oh, guess what? We have to qualify somebody to be our PGA Championship Uinta Golf Major Giveaway Qualifier. Okay? We're going to do that when we come back. Stay right here with us. Unrival continues. 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
What are the odds?
Okay, sir, the bet is to you.
All in, baby!
You'll know exactly. More or less. What's going to happen? This is 97.5 1280 The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for being with us on the program. On a Wednesday edition of the show, Unrivaled marches on here. Remember Myron Roll? He was the Rhodes Scholar out of
He's a doctor, right?
And now he's a neurosurgeon, yeah. Right? And he's just he's one of these guys that he was a honorable mention All-American.
He was a good football player.
He's a really good football player, but I don't think people understand what that means. That anyway, he does brain surgeries now. I just thought that is probably the coolest thing ever. They did this big write up on him.
He's a brainiac,
literally. I mean, he does brain operations like every day. Wild. And you know what? He's got to be excited about that. Think about the irony of what he could have gone into in the pros when it has to do with brain injuries versus actually going in and repairing brains now as a brain surgeon. Pretty dang cool. We've got What Are the Odds right here. First, a market update brought to you by the folks at TryDayTrading.com. The Dow Jones, tough day today on the markets. Down 1,164 points is the Dow. The NASDAQ was down 566, and then the S&P lost 165 as well. So we'll just leave that there and move on talking about sports. Scott, what are the odds that Tiger Woods – oh, here's how the game works. I give you a scenario, or you give me one. 0 to 100% chance that thing will or will not happen, then bonus points if you can give a jersey number that's associated with it. What are the odds that
– And folks can play at home.
And you can play at home. Just yell it out at your radio or your car, podcast, whatever. Tiger Woods, what are the odds that he makes the cut in this PGA Championship? So you got the guy who bet $20,000 on him to win $1.2 million as a 60-to-1 odds. Now, his odds to make the cut are actually 3-to-1. So that's a way better – those are way better situations. But Tiger Woods, what are the odds he makes the cut in this PGA Championship?
I think it's relatively high. I think Tiger's going to make the cut. I'm not worried about that.
Okay.
But I'm going to say it's Hesley Hempstead, 66%.
That's actually not that high.
Yeah, it is. It's more than it's like
so
almost
better than 50% chance.
It's close to 70%.
See, and I'm going to go with a
3 out of 4, close to that. 66.6667.
Okay. We'll call it 2/3, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it a. Let me see.
Oh, so I got to do 75 if I want it to be.
Oh, fine. I'll go 75. I'll go. Well,
who are you
going to
go?
What's his name?
Don't ask me.
I'll go Howie Long. I'll go Howie Long, 75%. There you go. What are the odds Cam Rising? You heard yesterday on our show, Yogi Roth said Cam Rising should be a Heisman Trophy candidate. What are the odds he's a Heisman finalist, gets invited to New York?
Oof.
That's tough.
Here's the thing. If Cam Rising plays well early against Florida.
It's a great start.
It gets him on the map. And my point is, if Utah's playing Weber State the first game of the season, it doesn't get a guy on the radar quickly. Cam Rising had a phenomenal game in the Rose Bowl, so people are aware of him. He's not a mystery because people need to become aware of a player, right? And being on the East Coast, playing Florida, SEC school, has a big game. He's going to get on the thing, and it'll probably be talked about, you know, throughout the season. I still think it's pretty low.
What do quarterbacks have to do to win the Heisman?
Throw a lot of yards.
And touchdowns.
And touchdowns.
Joe Burrow threw 60, yeah, right when he won it?
Yeah.
He was the last one to win. And you got to be either a wide receiver at Alabama, or you got to be
a quarterback at Alabama.
And you got to throw. But again, you've got to throw. And I don't even think it's about the yards. I don't think people would look and go, how many yards did he throw? 4,400? It's less about that. They want this insane, almost unattainable touchdown to interception ratio. And I just don't
think he can do that.
Like they want that 45-5 kind of TD ratio.
Yeah, Cam Rising's not going to throw 4 or 5 touchdowns a game.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And so I think that the odds are low, not because they're not going to be successful, but because they look for this unattainable thing in a quarterback.
Yeah.
And on top of it, I mean, Utah's just not it's just not known as being a quarterback school. I said that right to your face, and you played quarterback at that school.
I went to all the flag football alumni games, and there was me, and I didn't know who the other guy was on the other side of the field.
They're like, he played cornerback. We actually couldn't find another quarterback. But yeah, so I think it's pretty low. I'm going to say that he's a finalist, that he goes to New York. I mean, that's a 4, maybe 5 people that they invite. Normally it's like now 3 or 4. I'm going to go with let's go with a Russell Wilson 3% chance.
Wow, that's 3%, way low.
3%. And that's probably
That's
high.
Like way low J-Lo.
I think it's actually pretty high.
No!
More like a...
I think he's going to have an amazing year.
He will. I did not say he wasn't going to have a good
year.
I
think he'll get recognition.
It's going to be... Yes, but he's not going to be Heisman finalist.
Yogi Roth is going to be talking to this about this guy.
Yogi Roth. I did like what he said when he goes, if I hear some national idiot get on there and go, wow, Cam Rising, I like this guy. Like, he's just found out about him. He's going to lose his mind. Right. I thought that's the same thing.
Troy Aikman, 8%.
Okay. That's high. See, I think it's less. I actually think
I feel
it's less
bad
than,
about that.
I think
it's
less
really
than
low.
1%, but I didn't know anybody who is a fractional between 0 and 1%.
Low,
okay.
Sweet chariot.
There you go. There's our what are the odds. We're going to come back. We will chat about what the Pac-12 has changed now and how it changes what that Pac-12 championship would look like. I've got the years that this would absolutely change what your Pac-12 championship game looked like, including one that affected Utah. Stay right here with us. More to go. It is Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome on in. It is Unrivaled 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Thanks for being with us on the show. Thanks for hanging out. Scott Mitchell, former NFL quarterback. Across me. Scott, everything feeling good on a Wednesday?
Yeah, it's feeling great. Just climbing up that old hump there and working to get down the other side.
Here we are.
We're almost there.
Yeah, we're glad you're joining us on the show today. So we've got a ton of stuff to get through. And right before our show started up, we actually saw this news pass. In the Pac-12 is going full on. They said effective immediately, the format of the Pac-12 championship game will be changing. That piques interest. Now,
it's
if you're
a big
like
a, statement,
if
right
you're
there.
An if you're an Arizona fan, you ignored the ignored it. If you're a somebody, if you're Colorado, you went don't care. We're not even close. But this one makes a difference for a team like Utah, a team like USC, a team like Oregon, a team like even Oregon State or Washington State, and that is that they are changing the format to take the highest winning percentage, regardless of North or South division, playing for that title game. No more North versus South as it's currently kind of constituted. You're not going to see that as a, hey, here's the best team from the North, here's the best team from the South, because periodically there are teams in the North who have the first two teams have better winning percentages than the South. And I'm trying to think, actually, every time that it's occurred in the history of this where you would have a Pac-12 championship game with these two divisions. So the two divisions fired up in 2011, right? First year of Utah's eligibility, or Utah and Colorado being in the conference, and so you had these two divisions. You had a North and a South. And actually, that very first year, here are the years that it would have actually made a difference. In 2011, Oregon and USC played one another in the Pac-12 championship game. It should have been, according to these new rules, with the two highest percentages of conference winning. Doesn't mean the overall record, but the conference winning percentage, it would have been Stanford versus Oregon. The very next year, Stanford versus UCLA, that should have been Stanford versus Oregon, according to this new setup. In 2015, Stanford played USC. It should have been, say it with me, Scott, Stanford versus Oregon again. So in the first 4 years of the conference existing, you would have had three times, or three out of the first 6 years that you would have had this thing would have actually affected it. Now, the most recent one, Washington versus Utah in 2018. If you recall that year, you had a number 10 Washington State Cougars team led by...
The beat Utah. Gardner Minshew.
Gardner Minshew, the Pirate, was leading that team. They were 8-1 in conference. And they were 8-1 just like the University of Washington was that they played in the Apple Cup, who they lost to in the Apple Cup.
Right.
And they would have played each other again under this format. They were the only two 8-1 teams in all of the Pac. It would have been Washington State, Washington in that Pac-12 championship game. How do you like the change, Scott?
Well,
because it's the only way the Pac-12 thinks they're giving themselves a little bit more of an opportunity to score a better shot at a playoff team.
The first thing that I love about this is that the Pac-12 is actually doing something proactive, and not from some hairdressing, you know, window dressing kind of perspective. This is saying, we understand the national landscape. We want to be a player in the national landscape here. We don't want to be an afterthought. We don't want to be left out of the party. And so it gives the conference much more visibility. You're putting your best two teams on display, and you're giving yourself a better chance for the college football playoffs. That's predominantly the reason. But what I like about it is the Pac-12 just actually did something. Like, they didn't talk about forming a committee or becoming part of an alliance or building up a, you know, let's talk to a PR firm and talk about how we can actually improve our image as a conference. They did something that's significant. To me, what I love about this, just right off the bat, first blush to me is, you have, like right now, you don't even think of the other half of the conference. You don't think about the North. It's like, we got to play those teams up there. We don't really care about them.
And
we
only,
care
about only in the Pac-12 championship. Yeah,
right. We care about, you know, UCLA, USC, Arizona. You know, and we're like friends with Colorado, right? If you're a Utah fan. But when you're now, it's like, you know, because there could be a real rivalry brewing between schools like Oregon and Utah, with the recent history these two schools have had, where they both kind of knocked each other out of playoff contention. So going to these schools, being aware of these schools, I think it just broadens the appeal and the kind of competitiveness across the whole conference, where now it just feels like that other part of the conference is just it's an afterthought. You don't even think about it, and it's exciting to think, could you develop a rivalry with a Stanford or an Oregon or even a Washington if you're a team like Utah.
Here's what's interesting is, I think a year like this year, you could legitimately see, I mean, we have so many question marks even up north, right? Oregon has a brand new coach, Dan Lanning, right? And you have Washington State, who's, you know, kind of on the up and up, but who knows what they're going to be. Washington is, I think, this is going to be a down next probably 4 or 5 years for the Huskies.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of this shift right now where you could have the North, who's been predominantly the stronger division in the first, while of this conference, because Oregon is always kind of been right there. Washington's been right there. And it's been USC mostly out of the South. And then Utah sprinkled in the, here and there. But the North has been predominantly the stronger division, and that's not the case this year. So what are the two – if you were just to ask yourself right now who the two strongest teams are in the Pac-12, you would probably say Oregon behind Utah, just because people just go, yeah, they've got a lot of talent. That's what Yogi Ross said yesterday, right? But the one that you and I really have looked at all the time, you could definitely see a UCLA-Utah Pac-12 championship game, which means that that UCLA-Utah game could be one of these like these games that mean even more, right? And UCLA is one of these teams that could be a surprise. USC and Utah could play in future conference championship games. That's awesome for the conference. It's awesome for Utah.
UCLA?
I mean, sorry, USC. USC okay. and Utah could play in the conference championship game. That's awesome.
Right.
You just want the best teams playing. You just want the teams with the best two records playing or the best two conference records playing anyway. It always seemed weird. And you might be asking yourself, what about that year Colorado was? Colorado was an 8-1 conference team that year.
Right.
They were way ahead of everybody else in the South. Utah, the year that they got in that 2018 season, and it should have been, I say should have been, according
started
to these
ugly.
Rules, it would have been, right. They were only a 6-3 team in conference play. Now, they lost that game by a dadgum field goal off of a weird, fluky play that UW returned for a pick six, right?
Right.
But the reality is that under these current circumstances, Utah wouldn't have played in that conference championship game. And that just shows you that more competitive, you have to bring more competition to this thing. Having better competition in the conference championship game tells the playoff committee that Pac-12 is a little bit stronger now. The Pac-12 got stronger today based off of this.
Well,
now, the NCAA is also going to eliminate divisions, or they're allowing you to eliminate divisions totally now. And so that's another step in the right direction, too. They're not going to do that in the Pac-12 yet, but this is as good as.
I mean, you have to feel good that you know this is a good idea, right? And so many good ideas in college football, people go, yeah, it's a good idea, but we're just going to kind of keep it this way. We're not going to change things.
We have it set. You know, it's like, don't interrupt.
Expanding the college football playoffs is really nice. So
don't interrupt the SEC, please.
But the other thing I think this does, you talk about kind of creating this whole conference rivalry type of thing or excitement, and these games are more meaningful because the South games are more meaningful to a team if you're like Utah. They just are. What I think it does though is it puts even more of an emphasis on every game you play in the conference. And I think it, you know, and people are going to always argue. They're going to go, well, you know, like USC this year, they don't play Oregon. And Utah plays Oregon, and so there's a bit of a, you know, and you don't know how teams are going to be year in and year out, but on paper today before the season starts, having to play Oregon is a harder task for, you know, a team like USC than whoever they play, because Oregon's probably the best team, and I want to say in the North, and I need to get away from that now because it's not that way.
It doesn't. It won't matter anymore.
But you may develop. Shoot, Utah may develop an interest in like Oregon State. You know, just based off of last year, or Washington State. You know, some of these schools that they don't really maybe think about as much. And I like that. I like that it just expands. I think it expands the interest of the conference from the fans' perspective as well. That. You know, it just feels like it's a much more cohesive type of feeling and competition within the conference. You really feel like we're going to go through all this. We're going to go through it together. And at the end of the day, guess what? The two best teams are going to play each other for a championship. And I like that.
It's better for the conference. It's a better resume builder. It makes it more competitive, which is good. I mean, I think about it and you go, but what's interesting is when Utah won the Pac-12, here's what you can feel good about. When Utah won the Pac-12 last year, the other best team in the conference was definitely Oregon.
Right.
They were 7-2 in conference play. Utah was 8-1. Those were the two best teams in the conference. So that's it. You got the right game last year. But the thing is that five out of the first 11 years, it would have been a different game.
Well, what's,
that's pretty insane to think.
And what's scary about that is if you're from the South, like all of those conference winners would have been from the northern part of the division.
Or in the in the SEC, they have that East-West thing, right?
Right.
So it's like
so
that'd be interesting to look at.
So the teams that are in the North are going, yeah, finally, because you know we've been hosed on this thing for years. And if you're a team in the South, I don't know why I'm referring to it like this anymore because it's just going to go away. But you're going to go, we better step up our game. I mean, you think about like across the Pac-12, you know, like. The South should be good. Should be a lot better. Arizona State,
right.
You know, falling off a cliff. You know, it's interesting because Arizona is now all of a sudden no longer the door. Like, I just remember a couple of years ago, like, oh, man, Arizona's bad. Like, they're really bad. And then I'm like, and then Oregon State was, like, really bad. Like, so bad. Like, and here you go. And transfer portal. The right coach in a situation and things actually improve.
You know, it's wild. I was looking back at these SEC games. If they eliminate divisions like this, or if they just said, hey, best winning percentage with the tie break.
Yeah.
Auburn and Alabama would have replayed again in the SEC championship game in 2017. The Iron Bowl getting that's the thing, is it? Like, there are going to be some of these. We would have had a repeat of the Apple Cup in the Pac-12 championship game.
Right.
In 2018. That's awesome for the conference. Like, not only is it that, you're going to have these interesting things where if Utah and USC play one another, this is how rivalries really do end up happening.
Yeah.
This is when you have amazing rivalries because it's like, because you already feel like this a little bit with Oregon. Oregon is pissed, man. Like, they are going to be chip on their friggin' shoulder against Utah right now, right? That feels almost like a... By the time they play each other possibly for the fourth time in the last two seasons, maybe in this Pac-12 championship game that's coming up this next season, if that happens, they'll have played each other four times in the last 2 years. That's a freaking rivalry.
Right.
Now, it's not much of a rivalry if Utah wins all four of those, right? But it's right there.
But then you go back to when Oregon kind of took out Utah, and you know, and that's the thing. It just goes back, and there's just a, like, you know, I was saying earlier, there's just a bigger opportunity for some really exciting matchups in conference championships.
Alabama,
and building bigger rivalries.
Alabama and Auburn would have played two seasons in a row in the SEC championship game. The Iron Bowl would have been doubled up in those 2 years. That's just the way it would have shaken out, right? That's how much this can improve. Most of the time, the top teams in these divisions, in each division, end up being the ones who go to the conference championship game. But Auburn and Alabama, when they go through the conference schedule, like one of them undefeated and the other one not, like maybe losing one game, and then they lose in the Iron Bowl to the other one, you have a 7-1 team. I mean, you would have had Missouri played Auburn in 2013. Nobody wants to see Missouri and Auburn play in a conference championship game.
Right.
They wanted to see Alabama and Auburn, which is what it would have been if they would have gone on highest winning percentage in those years. That's just in the SEC.
If you look at the situations in the Pac-12 when it was – if it would have changed. So the would have changed 2011, 12, and 15 would have been Stanford versus Oregon.
Right.
So in a short period of time, you're going to see two teams – who are clearly the best teams in the conference.
And we knew it then.
And they're playing each other for a conference championship. Because let's say Stanford and Oregon, if they're from the North, let's say they play each other in like the second week of the season. And then it's like, and then it's over for one of them. And it's like, oh, we want a rematch because look at what we've done. Look at we're the second best team in the conference. We want a shot. We want another shot at this team in the championship. Instead, they're going to get, you know, UCLA that was like 6-4,
right?
You know,
They were 5-4 in conference play, and you're going,
and they were the best. They're clearly not the second best.
And but that looks bad for. I mean, that's also terrible because the committee looks at it and goes,
it's terrible.
Oh, cool, you beat this unranked team,
and so maybe the only loss Stanford had all year is to Oregon, and so now you get the rematch. Right? We all like a rematch in sports, And so that championship game becomes more meaningful. And then you have, that's when those rivalries start to develop, as we were talking about. And that's where here's something just makes so much sense. It'd be better viewing, better everything for the whole conference.
Here's the other thing that would happen.
And they did a smart thing.
You don't have Michigan blowing out Iowa in the Big 12 championship game or in the Big 10 championship game last year. Instead, what do you get? Rematch between
Ohio State and Michigan. Yeah. Which is the way it should be.
2-8-1 teams.
Yes.
Or an Iowa 6-3 team. Or an Iowa 7-2 in conference play. That's not what you want. But that's what you got. And if you start eliminating these things, you're making college football better. You're making it more exciting. You're making it way more exciting. Would you rather have seen Ohio State versus Northwestern or Ohio State versus Penn State? You know what I mean? That's the reality of what about breaking
up. So
these
divisions. What happens? So the NCAA has voted to scrap divisions. What does that mean?
It made this possible. It cleared the way for, because what you can't do right now is just blow up divisions. Like, I mean, I guess you could. But I think you have to have a bigger vote or whatever. They had this thing ready and loaded up. So the Pac-12 put their press release out about the highest winning percentage going to the Pac-12 championship game minutes after this thing was released.
Yeah.
So the NCAA votes to loosen up divisions, like the recommendations or the requirements for a championship game in these conferences, by saying you don't have to have a divisional deal. You don't have to have a North Division and a South Division champion or East Division, West Division champion play each other. Instead, you can have, if you want, now it's up to the conference, like so many of these things have been turned over to conferences to be able to make this decision. Would the SEC make that decision? Or do they look at it and go, that's another chance? Because look, Scott, if Alabama plays Georgia in the Pac-12 championship, or I mean in the SEC championship game, that's another loss that one of those teams is going to incur, right? And if there's a team that is, if there's a team on the other side of the division, or on the other side of the conference, and they don't have to lose a game, they could still be up for that conversation about being in the college football playoff by not playing somebody,
right?
Which is terrible.
I have to think, if you're a school like BYU. Or your school like Oklahoma, Texas.
I'm trying to think what the implications would be.
Well, the implications are, I think it would be better for you going into the conference with just a straight up shot at winning. Whereas, like, let's say you're put in a division. Let's say the other division's really weak, and you're put in the really tough division. So let's just say they put in with like Baylor, and they always got to beat Baylor if they're going to go
right,
and they just have a hard time. They can't seem to do it. And now it's like, well, you know, we could still lose to Baylor and still be the second best team in the conference and still have a shot to go. And, you know, I think of Oklahoma and Texas being put in, like, in with Alabama in the SEC. And it's like, oh, man, we're never going to get to an SEC championship game because we can't beat Alabama. We can go undefeated. We can have one loss on the year, but, you know, so this gives us that opportunity to actually go and win a conference, you know, because you could lose to Alabama early on in the year and then beat them in the conference championship, and then that gives you a legitimate shot at actually going to the tournament. Whereas before, you're out, you're done.
Way better for college football. Way better for
the conference, for football fans. Absolutely. For all of them. It's amazing.
So you're gonna get the best conference. You're gonna get the best conference championship game now. Which I don't think we really thought about it that much, just because it wasn't how we trained our brains to look at it.
No.
We
assumed divisions were a part of it, and that's just what you do.
You got to probably beat Oregon or Washington. Yeah. That was the original thought. Or Stanford out of the North. And now it's totally changed.
Hmm.
A USC, how much more would that mean if you beat USC in the Pac-12 championship game for Utah? That's how you create a real rivalry. If you're going to fake a rivalry right now, that's where you're kind of at. But if conference championships, not just conference division, South champs, no one cares now. South champs means nothing now. It really means nothing now.
No.
It's all just about those numbers. It's all just about that winning percentage in the conference. Get me to the Pac-12 championship game. Can you win that thing? All right, we'll take the break here. Hey, let's qualify caller number 12 right now. What do you guys say? Caller number 12 right now, 855-340-ZONE. PGA Championship is right around the corner here. Now, hold on a minute, because Bryson DeChambeau's off of the he's now out officially of the PGA Championship. Was he on the list? I want Jeremy to do some homework here, because if we assign somebody Bryson DeChambeau, okay, good. Jeez. Whew, I was nervous about it. Bottom line is, if you're a golfer that you're assigned, which I think we only have one left, who's the last golfer?
No,
okay, not going to say?
We can't tell.
Fine. You get the final golfer on the list.
Is it one of the top 24 golfers?
Top 24 golfers in the world. It's not the field. No. It's better than the field. There you go. 855-340-ZONE, 855-340-ZONE. We will assign you a player in this week's PGA Championship. If that player wins, you win the same brand of putter as that winner uses. It's the Uinta Golf Major Giveaway. We've been doing it so far. This has been the funnest dang thing. I love it. And it makes you watch this championship, and you're going to be screaming at the TV for your guy.
For your putter.
My heavens. Let's get this thing going. Call number 12 to 855-340-ZONE. We'll come back. More to go right here on the program. Speaking of golf, we're going to be chatting with Bob Casper on the way back from Real Golf Radio. So join us right here. More to go right here. They're down in Oklahoma now, too. So we'll talk to them, get their vibe on how things are going down there in Tulsa. Stay right here. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone.
This is Hanson Scotty.
Let's do it.
Look, I'm not a fan of Urban Meyer, but this kicker needs to shut up and go away. Do I think that he should have been kicked? Probably not. Do I think that Urban Meyer has the right to say, hey, beep, beep, make sure you make your beeping kicks? Yeah, he could say that as a coach. Let's say we're all having a meeting, me, you, and Lloyd. And
this Uinta Golf PGA Championship Update with Bob Casper is brought to you by Mountain Land Supply, Zions Bank, Hoops Vision, Siegfried and Jensen, and Get Some Guns and Ammo. And now, Real Golf Radio's Bob Casper.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone of the Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Alex Keery here in this seat. Across from me, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell. We just qualified our last. Did we just qualify our last listener there?
All right, the field is set.
The field is set. Everybody's set. So somebody on that list between all the shows. Yeah, the final one, the final person who got qualified. Who got the last one here then, Jer? So Paul qualified with Abraham Answer, and Bob Casper from Real Golf Radio joins us right here, of course, on the Zone Sports Network every Saturday. Bob, Abraham Answer. He's a top 25 golfer in the world, but not the first one people would probably pick to be a favorite down this weekend. But it's a toss-up. That's what the best thing about this is. Sometimes we just totally get surprised by these majors.
He's an interesting guy because he's kind of sneaky. He's worked himself up into the top 25 in the world, and he's a really, really good player. He's contended. He's won. And he does decent in majors, but he's going to have to play really, really good this week.
So who do you like this week?
You know, I like Jordan Spieth. I like Jon Rahm. I like Justin Thomas. A lot of those guys, Rory McIlroy, Patrick Cantlay, Dustin Johnson, a lot of those guys are in the top 10, top 15, top 20 in the world. And I think this is going to be a golf tournament where you're not going to get a I don't want to say it like this, but you're not going to get a pretender that's going to win this golf tournament. It's going to be somebody that plays extremely well, that is playing really well right now, and this is a tough golf course. It's going to be tough, and I think the best players in the world are the guys that are going to be there.
So as we look at it, and as things kind of get there, you got down to Tulsa, and you guys are set and kind of seeing how things are going down there. So what is the anticipation of the weather going to be this week down at Southern Hills, and what are kind of the things that people get nervous about with this course?
Okay, so right now it's really hot. It's really hot, Scott. You know when you have 2-a-days and it's 95 degrees and it's like 90% humidity.
90 yeah. Days. I understand those days well.
Oh, yeah. Those are so brutal. And, you know, Brian and I are we're playing a golf course up in Oklahoma City and staying up there. and then we'll be down at Tulsa tomorrow and the golf tournament. But it's like 95 degrees here today, and my body's not ready for that. I played like 10 holes. I shot even par, and I'm like, okay, I'm not playing anymore. And Brian's playing away, and he says, you need to take the interview for me. And I said, okay, no problem. But the weather is, for the next 2 days, it's going to be 90, 90 for Thursday and Friday. And then as we get closer to the weekend, it's going to drop down into the 70s, which is going to be absolutely perfect. But the thing that they're doing, or the thing that the weather's doing, is it's windy. It's going to be, 15 to 25 miles an hour winds the next couple of days. And then as we get closer to the weekend, it's going to all die down. But yeah, that's what's all about this. Then the other thing is you're going to have to hit fairways. You're going to have to hit greens, give yourself opportunities on those greens to make some birdies and stuff. And then you're going to have to keep yourself out of that creek that meanders through the golf course that we talked about yesterday.
So Tony Finau, of course, the local favorite here. Where is he right now? And does he have a chance to win? Is this a course where the long hitters will have an advantage this week, and Tony's kind of one of those guys?
Long will have an advantage. Always length has an advantage. But it's only an advantage if they can keep the ball in play and keep it in the fairway. So if they hit it in the rough, it's going to be difficult because, that Bermuda rough is really thin and spindly, and it's going to be 4 or 5 inches. And if you hit it out in the rough, that ball is going to go into that rough, and it's going to drop right down to the bottom and to the ground. So you gotta keep the ball in the fairway to maximize the opportunity to play into the green there at Southern Hills.
Bob Casper joining us right here on Unrivaled on the Zone Sports Network. You can hear he and Brian Taylor, of course, on Saturday, 6 to 8 a.m. right here on the Zone Sports Network for Real Golf Radio. But one thing I keep thinking about with this whole thing, when these guys come in here, we see that the odds kind of flipped, actually, because John Rahm was, at the beginning of the week, the odds on favorite, according to the odds makers, and now it's switched. But still, long odds for even the favorites in this thing. I mean, the parity in golf's really dang good, but some wily soul out there put 20 grand down on Tiger Woods at 60-1 odds. So if there's somebody like that out there, what are the odds that Tiger Woods really does play to that top 15, top 10 type caliber this weekend?
Well, Tiger is a guy that loves warm weather, and warm weather is going to help him with his body here at the golf course. The other thing is, the last time they played the PGA Championship here, Tiger won. So he really feels good on this golf course. There's been kind of a facelift, so to speak, but it's still the same routing. It's a little bit longer. And everybody's saying that he looks phenomenal this week. He's swinging it better. He's got his speed up a little bit more with his swing, and that he looks stronger, physically fit and stronger. So the time between the Masters, when we watched him walk off, after the interview where he looked like he was dead and tired and hurting and everything, he's looking like he's ready to go this week. And he wouldn't be playing if he didn't feel like he was ready to do it. Then we've got the U.S. Open next month and the British Open the following month, and he's already said he's going to play the British Open. So I expect him to play all the majors going forward.
If you could play, listen, if somebody's going to go, I guess I'll play St. Andrews.
Well, that's all he wants to play, though.
Yeah,
he just wants to play.
Come on, man. I guess I'll play St. Andrews for the Open Championship. But, yeah, I mean, everybody wants to
play limited events. Yep. He's going to play limited events going forward. Maybe 6-8 times a year, if we're lucky. He'll play the majors. And he'll play courses where he's had a lot of success, like Torrey Pines and Bay Hill, Memorial Club. Those kind of things where he's won like 5 to 8 times on each of those courses. So,
and
go ahead.
I was just going to say, those are the courses I like to play too.
Throw the Sony Open in over there in Hawaii too. Come on.
No, I don't want to play over in Hawaii.
No, he doesn't want to play that.
So you mentioned yesterday, I thought this was interesting. You mentioned about you felt that the people who are going to win had to kind of get out to an early lead. And typically, you don't want to play yourself out of a golf tournament early, right? So what's a good score? What do you think that strategy would look like for these guys?
anybody that shoots under par tomorrow in the first round, you know, 2-3 under par, maybe 4 under par, they're gonna be in good stead as the event goes along, because this golf course has a way of separating players and making the best players that can navigate that get into the mix and play extremely well. I know when I caddied for my dad here in 19, I can't remember the year that Raymond Floyd won. Raymond Floyd shot 63 in the first round.
Wow.
That's
here.
I'm trying to. And, I'm going to look up the exact year for you because I got it right in front of me. So,
and when you can do that, I mean, those rounds are out there. They're few and far between, but they are out there. And if you can do that, you really kind of separate yourself from the rest of the field.
1982, and it was the
82,
and it's still the record on that course of 63. So,
yep.
Pretty
yep.
wild. A 7 under par on the first day for Raymond Floyd. But
correct.
How much is the, like, I know that the golf courses just seem to have keep getting longer and longer and longer and more insane. But how much has the golf course changed even since 1982 since you've seen it?
Well, so there's only 2 par fives on the golf course now. And those par fives are over 630 yards. They've got one that's like 637 and another one that's 650, 50 or 60, something like that. So you're taking the opportunity away from the players to hit the par fives in 2, unless it gets really warm and you catch it downwind and you get a good bounce and all that kind of thing. You're taking that opportunity away from them. So, you know, birdie is, it seems like birdie is the best they can do. But, you know, 75, almost 7,600 yards, which is a stern test. And it's really, really weird. They've increased the size of the greens by 10% huh. on the golf course.
Hmm.
They've increased the size of the greens by 10%, but effective play of the greens is 10% smaller.
Oh, wow.
So even though they've made them bigger, they've contracted down the size for pin placements and stuff like that. So you'll see a lot of guys hit greens and stuff, and the balls will roll off the greens because of the shapes and the drop and the fall offs and that kind of thing. So you got to, it's going to be tough. You get a lot of slope in them. These greens are going to run about 13, maybe more. And you've got to have a really good short game, chipping and putting, and you're going to see those guys be the best of the week.
Bob Casper, host of Real Golf Radio right here with Brian Taylor every Saturday on the Zone Sports Network. We love having you on the show, Bob, and give us a picture of what it looks like down there in Oklahoma at Southern Hills. We'll chat with you guys later in the week and have fun down there while you're there on that short trip here.
Alex and Scott, I appreciate it, man.
All right.
Good talking to you.
Stay out of that heat, too. Get back in that hotel room. Stay cool, man. All right.
Exactly. I need AC.
Get that AC going. All right. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. We got more to go here on the program. Tom Brady's roast from yesterday we were discussing deserved a little bit more attention, because I think we should talk about the guys, the athletes, and the history of sports that we'd prefer to roast the most. This was Scott's brilliant idea, too. And it was a brilliant one.
Roast the most?
The host that you roast the most. It's all coming up. Stay right here with us, 97.5 1280, The Zone and The Zone Sports Network.
Attention.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
Attention.
With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
This is 97.5 1280, The Zone, powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280, The Zone, and The Zone Sports Network. One of the great tunes by the Eagles. My heavens. So there was, when I was a kid growing up.
I love this song.
There was a station down in Texas called The Eagle, all right? And they were a brand new station, so how did they kick things off? They were letting everybody know that they were switching signals. It was like, you know, went from like a country station to a classic rock station. It happens in this business, right? The format changes. They played Hotel California for 72 hours straight back to back.
Wow. I'd listen.
I did. Oh, my gosh. I would just tune in wherever it was. Okay, all right.
Rising up in the air.
I'm going to let this go as long as we can.
I saw a shimmering
light. Don Henley. All right. Well, why are we playing this tune? Because it's a Win Ticket Wednesday. And despite the fact that Scott won't be the one singing that night when the Eagles come to town to visit Smart Home Arena, they might call you up.
Yeah.
Is that Scott Mitchell out there? I see.
Get the lighter. Well, get the phones out now.
Oh, yeah. No lighters. Phones.
The phones.
Caller number 12 right now on a Win Ticket Wednesday on the Zone Sports Network wins two tickets to the Eagles Hotel California tour. That is a week away, by the way. Right?
Week
yes.
Away.
We're a week away from this thing. So May 25th, a week from tonight, the Eagles are going to be right here at Vivint Smart Home Arena. Call number 12, 855-340-ZONE. That's 855-340-ZONE. Win two tickets to the Eagles next week here at Vivint. Man, that's awesome. All brought to you by the folks at Live Nation. For all your concert needs, visit livenation.com. Call number 12, two tickets to the Eagles Hotel California tour. They do the full Hotel California album front to back. And then they also do extra hits. So it's going to be an amazing show.
They play what you want to hear.
Yeah. Look, no one wants to go get the C-sides of their favorite artists. But in the case of the Eagles, they have like basically hit after hit after hit after hit after hit. Yeah. You better play.
I went and saw Billy Idol with my daughter Madison.
Yeah.
In Las Vegas last October.
You guys have gone multiple Billy Idol concerts. Yes.
And he has new material.
No thanks.
No one listened. It's like everyone's up rocking around, and then it's all of a sudden this song goes on, and we kind of look. I've never heard this one. I don't know what this one is.
Oh my gosh!
And everyone just stopped. They're just like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Is it like a total change of his style too?
It's just like, weird. It's like
this one's off my new album. And you're like, don't care. No. Oh, that's
look.
That's a death nail. Don't tell me. Just play it.
New at your age, not a good thing.
No, it's not good.
No.
All right, Scott, yesterday we were talking about it, and it made me start thinking, because you brought it up yesterday during the break, and I thought, you know what? Scott's got a point. Because Tom Brady being roasted on Netflix, I'm going to watch that thing like crazy. Giselle has to say something. You've got to get some of the craziest people across the world of sports and of roasting possible. Right?
I think Bill Belichick has to be the
if
guy.
If Belichick makes a freaking appearance on that dais, I will lose my stuff.
But he's got to be funny. That's what would make it like he just gets some real zingers in there.
But Bill Belichick style zingers.
And
I'll tell you, from a guy who has a background in writing comedy, when people don't expect somebody to be funny, like Bill Belichick,
exactly.
You don't expect it.
Right.
If it's even halfway there,
yes,
you will give him the benefit of the doubt and be like, I can't believe you just said that.
It'll be amazing. Yeah.
Please bring Bill Belichick to the party.
Yes.
Now, who would, as a professional athlete, who would you want to see roasted? Because it's kind of a humbling experience, but it's also this kind of, when you get roasted, it's a little bit of a humble brag. Like, oh, they're roasting me because I'm so popular, I'm being roasted. But also, people start to kind of rip on you, and sometimes these egos can't take it. Sometimes people don't get the spirit of the roast.
Well, I don't like roast when they're, you know,
mean-spirited.
Just really raunchy,
mean-spirited.
Like, be clever, you know? Say something, you know, just, you know, as you always say, don't go to the lowest common denominator of comedy, right?
Right.
And just be clever about it. And so,
although we're not above fart jokes on this show.
Because they're funny. they're just funny.
Just so you know, fart jokes are not the lowest common denominator.
Right, right, yeah.
Sarcasm is.
So if I was taking, like, in the NFL today, like the number one person that would be fun to roast, I have to think, I would say it would have to be Aaron Rodgers.
He would not take it well, which makes it even better.
Exactly. He would be this, he would hold like some vendetta.
He wouldn't even agree to it.
He would just be like all pouty and all, you know. And I'll tell you who has to be on there. Brett Favre has to roast.
He's got to be on there. It's Jordan Love.
Aaron.
Let Jordan Love roast him.
And then Mike McCarthy.
McCarthy's got to be on there.
He has to be on there.
Okay, now I think of
And then Davante Adams.
Put him on the dais.
Got to be on there now.
Now here's, like and right
then,
now.
But then here's the best one. Alex Smith.
He can get up there.
Because Alex was the number one pick in that draft, and it's like, yeah. Got to roast
him. Like, it's good. He's like, this feels familiar, right? Me talking on a microphone on a big stage before you do?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I think Aaron Rodgers would be a good one.
Most awkward roast, though, right now. Like, if Ryder's got a hold of this thing, Deshaun Watson. Like, that guy getting roasted right now.
Yeah. See, that's one of those too soon.
Oh, yeah.
It's just too soon.
But there's almost like a little bit of like a, maybe you have to, just to really run him through that ringer. I think another awkward one, Kyler Murray. Because, like, he's sensitive right now. You know, like, he's a little bit hurt. A person that you could always roast and they would have a big smile on their face no matter what, Russell Wilson.
Or Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers, like, he's like.
Or Drew Brees.
Philip Rivers would be more because he doesn't actually know what's going on.
Right.
He's like, that's funny. I don't really know why, but I like it.
I'll tell you, speaking of sensitive, you know who would be sensitive? Would be Baker Mayfield.
Oh, my gosh. A roast with Baker Mayfield right now. Although, I don't know. He seems to have a pretty good sense of humor. Things are just weird right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You could probably get him pretty good, though.
Best roast, though, in all of sports right now would be who?
Kyle Lowry?
Maybe Chris Paul?
Chris Paul would be a good roast
where he's old, so those old jokes start coming in. He doesn't win anything, so those jokes are creeping in.
I even think LeBron would be a good roast.
Now, LeBron doesn't deserve it. You know why? Because he knows that he would get roasted because of how popular he is. He would take it like it's a massive ego boost. But I would love to hear the slighting comments, you know, from people.
You stink, and I don't like you!
I still think, though,
the best roast would just be... Well, you just need Charles Barkley and Shaquille as the grumpy old men in the balcony seats.
Oh, the Waldorf and
the old Muppets.
What is it? No, Stanford and Waldorf. What is it?
No, it's
Stansbury Park and Wallingford and Wallsburg. What are the guys' names?
Wallsburg is a small town.
I know Wallsburg and Stansbury Park. And those two aren't those the two guys that are up in the? Who is it? I can't remember their stinking names. The two old guys. It's Walford and Statler? Wadford and Statler? That's not their real names, is it? It's not Waldorf and Astoria? All right, we'll take the break here. We'll come back. Hey, around the corner, voice of the Utah Jazz, David Lott going to join us. Now that we're down to four teams, I'm interested to see what his thoughts are now after the Jazz were eliminated by the Mavericks, and then the Mavericks ended up upsetting these, or was it an upset against this this Phoenix Suns team? See you right here with us. More to go. 97.5 continues. It's 1280 The Zone. It is Unrivaled.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love.
We're not going anywhere. Right
with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network, powered by KSL Sports. Thanks for being with us on the program. Alex Keery, former NFL quarterback Scott Mitchell. We were talking a little bit earlier in the show. If you miss any of the program, by the way, you can always download the podcast. We post those dang things every dang day, all right? And every show across the entire Zone Sports Network as well. You can hear all the podcasts all day long. Download the KSL Sports app. You can stream the station live all day, or you can go back and listen to episodes as well of the program. Biggest news of the day was obviously the Pac-12 is scrapping divisions as part of the way for you to be able to qualify for the Pac-12 championship game. The thing is that the divisions are still there as it's set up for scheduling, because that's the thing that you can't, you know, you can't really mess with, Scott. Like, is the actual schedule, because they have that thing set, and so they're going to be playing the traditional schedule as it's kind of put.
Well, they'll have to continue to have a schedule,
right? Like, kind of put out using the. So when they actually scrap the divisions totally.
Could there be the potential that Utah doesn't play USC, you know, or you know, that it rotates right all the way around, so that there's
there be a more traditional round robin like we've seen in the past in some of these conferences? Don't know, but the Pac-12 is now going to take those highest percentage conference wins the top two teams. And five out of the last 11 years, the conference championship game would have been affected, including one that Utah played in 2018. So big news. You're going to get the best two teams playing each other. That's what you want as a fan. So that's the big news from today.
Bigger news to me is the Pac-12 actually did something. they didn't just go, oh, yeah.
Right. I think George Kliavkov is killing it, man. I mean, yeah. It was within minutes of the NCAA saying that they were going to look the other way on how to do these conference championship games, and they changed it. So good for them. Yeah. We're going to kick the show off, as we always do, with the cut, and joining us is going to be the voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke. So let's get right to the cut.
The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled, top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Ain't nothing like it.
A cut brought to you by University of Utah Health. At University of Utah Health, you get the same great care that the Jazz, the Utes, and RSL all trust. UofUHealth.org. It is UofUHealth.org. And also joining us on the program, courtesy of the Murdoch Auto Group, is David Locke, voice of the Jazz. David, how's it going, man?
I'm good. I've got a few questions for you right out of the chute.
All right.
Oh.
One, shouldn't the cut be brought to you by University of Utah Orthopedic Center?
Listen.
Okay.
If you want to get on the sales staff, it's open for business.
I mean, I've just been listening to that every week, and I'm like, doesn't it have to be from the Orthopedic Center if it's going to be called the cut?
Yeah.
Could
be a steakhouse. Could be a steakhouse, too. I mean, hey.
Could be.
In the future.
Could be. Well, yes, that is true. Second one is, so when the Pac-12 expanded, or the Pac-10 expanded to 12,
right.
Yes.
They promised Stanford to get them to go to the North, that they would play USC and UCLA every year, because those are Stanford's. Stanford is a longtime Pac-8 member,
sure, right.
Had that USC-UCLA rivalry and the Cal rivalry, and the deal was that they were guaranteed to get USC and UCLA on their schedule every year. So Stanford, for all these last years, has been playing a different schedule than all of the other northern teams. And it's actually why Stanford has come to Utah so rarely. Is that still in place?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that right now, I don't know what the divisions are going to look like going forward. And those, I mean, obviously you would know the Stanford background with your connections there. But I mean, I think in the end, what George Kliavkov is trying to do is just like, hey, man, we got to make this conference a little bit stronger to be able to look a little bit better, to be in that college football playoff discussion. And, you know, there's a couple years in there. We were looking at this schedule kind of over the years. Washington and Washington State would have repeated the Apple Cup in 2018 because they were the number 10 team and number 12 team in the country. And one beat the other the week before and won that North and then left out, Wazoo out of that whole thing. And so the whole deal is, I think it just makes it more competitive.
I think yes, to answer your question. And I'll say it like this, and I'm just speculating here, but I'm not going to say, I don't have any information to know for sure, but I would think that the conference would want to maintain those traditional rivalries every year. So the Apple Cup, like Alex just talked about, you know, Washington State, Oregon State, UCLA, USC, Stanford, Cal, Arizona State, and then Utah and Colorado. It doesn't matter.
Well, I was going to say, those teams don't have traditional rivals, so maybe that's where you mix it up, is you don't care about those teams that don't have traditional rivals.
I think you'd be smart to do that, though, to keep those rivalries and I, you know, the Stanford rivalry and all that stuff.
There's going to be some potting that goes on where groups of four all play each other every year.
Right.
I think so.
Yeah.
Right, because Washington's going to want to play Oregon every year. That's a huge rivalry.
Right.
So I think you're going to pod the Washington schools and the Pacific Northwest schools. You're going to, if you get rid of Cal, you pod the California schools, you pod the Arizona and Utah schools and Rocky Mountain schools, and you play them every year.
Yeah, it has to be.
And then you build your schedule out of that if you're getting rid of this. The other question I would have on this, good, that was good, Scott. The other point I would make on this is, do we actually think it gets more teams into the championship? Because, you know, if the real problem is, more often than not, we don't have a team that's championship, you know, playoff worthy by the time we get to the playoff. It's not that we've been having teams go to the championship game and losing and then suddenly not being playoff worthy.
Right.
In fact, I can't think of that happening.
No, but
maybe Oregon somewhere along the way. So I wonder, the only thing I feel like this is if we ever actually have one of those teams that's playoff worthy, we're now putting them at more risk than they might have been before.
Well, I think that if there's the idea would be too that the argument is if they're on the edge and they have a better win against, for example, Stanford beating UCLA or Oregon beating UCLA a few years ago when that UCLA team was, I think, 9-4 overall or 8-5 or whatever it was on the season when they should have been playing Stanford in the Pac-12 championship game. Then you have a team like Oregon that everybody's looking at and going, okay, so they even that good? They just beat a 9-5 team to win the conference championship, you know, so to speak. And that's, I think, you can accelerate a little bit of that thought of they have better quality wins. Now, from the SEC side of things, if the SEC goes a different direction, maybe that game actually does eliminate the idea. You could actually put in danger the idea of that second SEC team getting in, because sometimes that team who loses in the Iron Bowl ends up not having to play in the SEC championship game, and they're like, phew, we don't have to lose another game this next week, so we're going to get in the playoff.
Well, right, so we're a one-loss team that gets in,
but,
right?
Right, but I could see a scenario where, and certainly hasn't happened in the Pac-12, I mean, to barely get one team in would be a minor miracle these days. But if you had two teams, let's just play out a scenario. You had Utah, USC, undefeated. Let's say USC beats Utah early on in the year. So Utah or USC remains undefeated, and Utah goes on and doesn't have another loss all year. So both of those, so they would play each other in the Pac-12 championship. And what if Utah won? And let's say USC is like, let's say they're number two in the college football playoff ranking. Again, this is like
a few years down the line.
Yeah,
maybe.
This is a unicorn scenario here. But let's say Utah beats them. And maybe Utah is like at 5, and so maybe does Utah get in, and does USC get in, and the potential of maybe having 2 1-loss teams from the same conference actually getting into the playoffs.
So what you're telling me is we have another pandemic. If you don't wear a mask, you actually die, and no one's alive in the South anymore
That's the scenario you just gave. The SEC becomes part of the NFC and AFC East.
The SEC was actually eliminated, and Governor DeSantis has actually killed all of the people who live in Florida. So
Florida's underwater.
Miami and Florida State don't exist. Yeah, right, and we had a climate control event.
I'm just using these two teams as examples. I believe me, I don't think this is a real chance.
When Utah and USC get into the college football playoff, because
when USC is 2 and Utah is 5, really, we don't sound like a Homer podcast at all.
My heavens.
Of course not.
You realize if like somebody's traveling for business and they're from the South Texas and they just listen to this, what they think of us right now?
If they're from Texas, they have no foot to stand on at this point.
I don't want to talk about Auburn and Alabama. Sorry, I hate the SEC. I think they're a bunch of snobs, so I'm not gonna use them as my example.
Yes, in the event that the SEC ends up becoming part of the NFL, yes, this could be a scenario that we're talking about.
Yeah, I was wondering the other day, like I was listening to someone talking about pro sports, and I was like, and where does college fit? Where is college at this point?
Right,
like you know, the pro game. I was like, and that's different than college football. How now?
Right.
Like,
not at all.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's been. There's no difference now. I mean, they're finally playing the players above board. A lot of these players have been paid before, and you know, now they've just legitimized the compensation.
Let me ask you this, David, because this is a cross section with the world that you live in the majority of the time, and you know, Jay Wright actually after his retirement said. Now, I think NIL is going to be good for college basketball ultimately, because once we kind of figure it out, it's like once the dust settles, basically, it will make it stronger, because then you don't have to – it will be competitive with these leagues that are taking players away from adding to the NBA from that stock versus, you know, having these other alternate leagues that guys don't want to go to college and avoid going to college with. So how does NIL affect ultimately what ends up in the NBA, or does it?
I don't think NIL affects the NBA at all, but I think Jay Wright's 100% correct. I think so. Right now, if you have a top 20 prospect, you're the parent of a top 20 prospect. At that point, you should be in still somewhat control of what goes on. Your choices right now are the Australian League, get paid about $1 million. G League Ignite, get paid a few hundred thousand. Maybe more. I think 500,000 is the biggest. Overtime Elite, I think you're paid a few hundred thousand.
Right.
or go to college and get nothing. So which one of the SAT time, remember the SAT, Scott, we got to get over 800 to get you eligible, all right?
I scored well on my entrance exam.
I actually don't doubt that. Which of these does not belong with the others?
Sure.
Right? College not getting paid at all. You know, the real problem, college, I've said this for decades since I actually used to host one of these things. I've always said if I had a top 20 player out of high school, I would never let them go to college because they restrict their practice time.
And the injury risk without money attached to it.
Right. But even more than anything else, they restrict his practice time.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Right? Like, I've got a kid who's a top 20. What is my most likely sequence? He's going to college to get a job, right?
That's what we're
hoping.
That's
why we go to college to get a better job.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, we go to college to learn more and get a better job. But, like, you're majoring in something. Like, my son's majoring in applied math. It's not so that he can go become an English teacher.
Right.
Right? It's so he can have a career in math. So if you're not going to let, one, my kids major in their sport, and there's an absolute major you could create out of that that has value, and two, you're not going to let them practice. You don't mind the flutist practicing. You don't mind the theater kid practicing. You only care about my basketball player or football player practicing. So I'm out.
Right.
So the first problem the NCAA has is if you're going to restrict my kid from practicing, when that's clearly what he's going to do. So what it's time for is the NCAA to take the next step, which is not only can you get name, image, and likeness, but you can major in your sport. And that major is real. It includes coaching and nutrition and finance and branding and all of these things because you might end up being a basketball coach. You could end up working for Nike and like, there's no reason you shouldn't be able to major in basketball studies.
Right. And these guys are rolling up on their rookie symposiums learning more about their new profession than they ever learned when they were in college.
And, right. You know,
like,
that's
the amount of jobs in sports today, why can't you major in basketball studies?
That's a great idea. And on top of that, to be competent enough at your craft, like, you have to work at it so long. And you really do. And you really have to put in, you know, I used to take golf lessons from a teaching pro. And he says there's just a point where you just have to bang enough balls. I mean, you just have to hit a bunch of golf balls. And it was like that for me in football. It's like you have to just throw a lot of passes, and when you're limiting someone's ability to just that side of it, and all these other the nutrition, the other side of it, the you know the job opportunities, but the actual craft of whatever sport you're in, you know, shooting 10,000 jump shots, there really is a process of being able to do that, and when you're limited. You know, and what happens is these players, they either don't do it or they do it on their own and they don't have the right fundamentals or correction or development, or they spend an inordinate amount of money and time going out wherever.
Right.
You know, I mean, you think of these quarterbacks that go to John Beck in California from BYU, you know, they drive to California, you know, on their own dime because they can't do it at college.
Right.
I don't think you really maximize someone's potential when you limit their ability to actually practice and really work at their craft.
What do you think a nutrition class would have done for you in college?
You know, nutrition's everything. Like, I would say, I'll tell you the two things that I would absolutely spend the most time on, and that one would
for
be
a future pro athlete.
For a future pro athlete, number one would be nutrition. No, actually, number one would be
money management.
How to train your brain.
Oh.
Like how to like it's 1,000% mental. You know, watching these Utah, it's like Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert gets into the playoffs, and his free throw shot changes. Like it just gets ugly, and you can just see it's all in his head. And when it's in his head, it affects his physical performance. Well, number one would be mental training and learning how to tap into getting your brain to work for you. And number two would be nutrition, hands down.
Right. So, and mental training might be more useful to you than reading Hamlet. I'm just going to go out on an edge.
Oh, you could apply that to any facet of your life. I mean, once you,
right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's. I mean, yeah, Hands down. It's fascinating to me how your brain impacts how you perform anywhere.
Here's the crazy one.
See, David, every day I have to go into this like state, this trance. Every day we're going to have you on the show. To get mentally prepared for you takes me about, I don't know, four days.
My nutrition falls right off,
too. That's a problem. Yeah, well, most people just take a shot of espresso or two, and then they feel better. But I understand for some people that's not an option. The other one, I mean, like, if you think about the insanity of all this, right? Like, someone who's listening right now and saying, well, that's a, you know, can you major in basketball? I could have majored in broadcasting. Why can't you major in basketball?
No, I know.
Like, that's college and major in broadcasting.
I majored in broadcasting.
They have so majors. Like, they have majors on for gaming. I mean, these right? kids yeah. can game as a...
Right, 100%. It's just so silly. So My point on we started on that was Jay Wright. Jay Wright is beginning to be right. In other words, NIL will be good for college basketball, but there's so many other things that have to happen to make college basketball a decent answer for a player to go play college basketball.
And at the same time, he and Randy Ray both were like, this is a lot right now. I'm going to get out right now. I'm cool. I'm gone.
I missed your guys' interview with Randy Ray and Scott and Hands with. Did he literally say that Nil was a part of it?
I mean, that was the it was just like, hey, the way things are, that's not my style anymore. It's just not my style, and I've loved the game, and I wish these guys the best of luck. But it's changed a lot, and it's made the job different. And I think for some guys, it's just it's not it doesn't make it fun anymore. It's not.
I've never understood this. Explain this to me in college. Sorry, Alex, I'm going to interrupt. Go ahead. I've never understood this in college sports at all. Why the head coach and the recruiter are the same thing?
In football, they all go, what's your worst part of your job? It's recruiting. It's the hardest.
Why wouldn't you just hire someone whose job is the head coach of recruiting? Like basically a general manager, right?
Right.
But like these things are billion-dollar industries. The coaches are getting paid $6 million.
Right.
We could pay someone $2 million to be the head of recruiting. Maybe they're the head of NIL, too. I don't know, but they certainly should be a 12 out. You know, it's a 24/7 job. Other than the few times that the NCAA says you can't do it, and they do it anyway.
Yeah, most good programs will have they'll have a recruiting coordinator. They'll have a whole team of people that are involved in the recruiting process, and they'll divide up. You know,
when does Nick Saban show up? Which guys does Nick Saban show up to chat with? You know, that's had to be pretty strategic.
He'd be the closer, and he'd be the
All right, so it's close. But it just seems to me that, like, why can't Jay Wright and Randy Ray coach basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough question. And I think some of these guys, the biggest thing is that they can coach all day. The thing that they have the least amount of control over is the transfer portal now. And that I think that is actually more of a problem for these guys than NIL is, really.
If you talk to Kyle Whittingham, he goes, most of my time is dealing with problems. I mean, I'm not coaching. I'm an administrator at this point.
Right.
You're dealing with 18 to 21 year old young men, and 100 of them at a time. You know, you're going to have problems. I mean, it's a monumental task.
I think there's another factor in here that I had not thought about until this conversation, but I was in this conversation with some close friends today. The age group of about 16 to 25, I think maybe 16 to 23, is the group that was hit hardest by COVID in their mental health.
Huh.
And so I wonder if a little of the Jay Wright, Randy Ray is, they're just dealing with, you know, we got 16 Division I athletes committed suicide this year, right?
Mm.
That's a crazy number. That's just Division I athletes. Those are people that have a lot of support, supposedly, like they should. They're people that in our model of what this is maybe the most important lesson to this, right, is that in what we classify as success in our society, those are successful people. Now, that's like the first lesson I think we've been trying to be pounded into our heads over the last decade is that the outward perspective of success and the outward, you know, vision that people of what seemingly you're fine is not. Does not preclude someone from having mental illness, right. And that's maybe the most important lesson here.
And
but I wonder if that's a part of this.
Yeah, and then this
group is not this age. This generation is really damaged by what's happened the last 3 years.
Well, and then you have guys dealing with it to an extent that, you know, obviously they didn't deal with it before, and so that mental health aspect gets to them, and it affects their mental health. I mean, he's got these guys in their early 60s who are going, normally I'd coach till I was 74, but it's too hard right now. Too hard.
And their bank accounts are big.
Yep. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Like Ron A. Begley was going to coach till he was 70 years old because he probably still needed the money.
Yeah. Well, Locke, hey, we should talk about the NBA next week. What do you think? I don't care, actually.
No, this is fun. I love this conversation.
The NBA has been pretty good recently, but I do like these other conversations.
No, this is an awesome conversation.
Hope I didn't derail the show.
No. Look, we only derail our show about every five minutes.
There's only been one game
in these conference finals so far, and it was a couple guys with the Celtics without their two really important players. And so I think everybody thought that the Heat were going to win that game last night anyway. But we'll be further into it next week, and we'll be able to really get a breakdown from you.
Here's my one NBA thought for our conversation. Get over the Luka frustration of having him beat us. And realize that you're watching the beginning of Michael Kobe LeBron, the next person.
Hey, why not? Yeah.
And enjoy watching that. This is LeBron at the similar stage in his career. You know, go back and look at the Cavalier team. LeBron carried it almost the exact same age to the finals. Like, it's a bunch of nobodies. Is Luka about to do the same thing?
I was equally annoyed with Luka in that series against the Jazz as I was entertained by him in that series against Phoenix. I came around. I was like, I like this guy right now. Like, the same head shakes, the same, like, pouty face he was doing to the crowd against the Jazz fans. I kind of like this guy's attitude. You know, I was like, I guess just change the team, and it changed my whole outlook. So, Locke,
I'm going to guess only one of the three of us have any understanding what it's like to know that you're clearly the best player on the field or floor at that moment. And what it's like to have that feeling is probably pretty unique.
Called Nirvana.
Locke, we'll talk to you next week. We appreciate it. I love having any of these conversations with you. So we love having you on, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
We'll see you. All right. Take the break. David Locke, voice of the Utah Jazz. Voice of reason today on the program. So let's take the break here. We'll come back. And NFL roundup is around the corner. Two-minute drill, all that. So stay with us. Unravel continues 97.5, 1280 The Zone.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback. The other guy on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. It's 97.5, 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. And yes, you heard the voice. It's the NFL Roundup. We've got to get to the NFL Roundup here, Scott. So because you're the former NFL quarterback, that's what we use you for. Is that okay if we use you and abuse you today on this
topic? It's what we do every day. Yeah. I get used and abused every day, and that's life as a co-host.
You're the hired gun.
You know?
You're the hired gun, man.
That's what I do.
All right. So Scott's going to take on that role as he does every day. The NFL Roundup looks like this. Interesting little setup here about some of these quarterbacks that are going into their second year. And I don't know. Oh, boy. Jeremy snuck in Davis Mills. Should we allow that?
No.
Just because you're a Texans fan and because technically Davis Mills is going into his second year, do we need to talk about you? If a quarterback throws a pass in Houston and no one's around to see it, did it get thrown?
Here's what happens in the NFL. There's this thing where there's this bias, right? It's an unconscious bias thing going on. And if you're on a really, really bad team,
right,
you have to validate yourself for about 7 years. So we'll get to Davis Mills in 7 years if he's actually.
We'll check in with him. Hold on. Yeah. Hey, Siri, set a reminder for 2029 to remember Davis Mills.
Perfect. All right, moving on.
Okay, so second-year quarterbacks. I look at guys that had some success last year in that rookie group, and I think we all just look at Mac Jones as kind of the guy who led that banner, right? I mean, he played for a team that had it together. He seemed to be in the system. What made his rookie year, the mild success that it was? I mean, that's a team that probably outperformed what the expectations were. Do we just look at that and go, yeah, it's because it's Bill Belichick? Or do we look at it and go, Mac Jones is a better value than what he was when he came out of college?
Where Mac Jones was is he was very consistent.
So he was consistent in his performance a year ago, whether it's on a pretty decent Patriots team or whether it was with Bill Belichick and he just got great tutelage. He was the most consistent performer, which I think will actually be hard for him to improve on that. And it'll be hard because you have the Bills in the conference, and for Mac Jones now it's like winning the conference title and going and playing deep into the playoffs, kind of like Joe Burrow did. I don't know that he's there. I don't know that even the Patriots are there. These other guys like Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, Trey, all of them, Justin Field, they were all just erratic, up and down, up and down, up and down. And can they dial that in? It's hard to say. Zach Wilson has a lot of weapons now offensively. And quite frankly, of all these guys, he may be the one best poised to have a better year.
So the list that we're looking at here, they actually rank these quarterbacks by, you know, these second-year quarterbacks. And Justin Fields, according to CBS, their NFL reporters say that Justin Fields is the least likely to be able to be successful. But part of that is because the Bears are going to be in a totally new situation here.
Still rebuilding, new
right.
coach.
The GM just
new
got let go.
Again.
The guy who drafted. See, this is the thing. It's kind of interesting because the Jazz situation sort of comes back a little bit, where it's like, hey, the GM who drafted me
is not here.
Yeah. And does that make a difference? Where it's like, hey, you're not my guy.
No,
really
a complete difference because you have less patience for mistakes. You'll see, you go, this wasn't my guy. I didn't draft him. It's not my thing.
Right.
So you're a lot quicker to go, I want to move on. I want to put my own stamp of approval on this. I want to make it happen. It's just funny. You hear all the things out of Chicago. We're going to make the offense quarterback friendly. We're going to make it easier on the quarterback. And what that sounds like is they don't really have a lot of confidence in their quarterback. You know, you never heard the Cincinnati Bengals go, we got to tone down our offense for Joe Burrow. You know, it just didn't happen.
So it was kind of interesting about Mac Jones, as we were just talking about this, is that one of the arguments they make is, and the guy who typed this article up, I always love, Chris Trapasso did this article, and he's pretty critical. And he said, I watched every Mac Jones drop back in 2022, and he might be the most overrated rookie quarterback in a long time. And I thought, well, that's pretty wild, because we just looked and said, I mean, at one point they were on a 7-game win streak, right, last year, and they go, well, this kid's got it going on, but if they really broke it down, which they do, they look at it and go, how much of an effect did he actually have on this thing? And the defense turned out to be way better than they thought. It ended up being a really, really good defense. And there were weapons around him that ended up making a lot of these plays too. But I don't know if I buy in him.
In a strong division. I mean, it's
if
not.
If you win 7 games in a row and you're a dang rookie, like, you can't just go, yeah, you're overrated, though. Other people helped you out.
A lot of people talk about his arm strength and
how it's not good.
And how it's not really good. Belichick isn't as big on arm strength. It's more where, you know, how accurate are you and how, you know, how good of an anticipator you are. You know, I wouldn't be too oversold on Mac Jones. You think about talking about overrated quarterbacks. Tom Brady was the most overrated quarterback for years. It took Tom Brady about 5 Super Bowls before he stopped becoming overrated.
What?
I mean,
because they just said it's the system he's in. Talent he's surrounded by.
Yeah.
And that's wild.
So I wouldn't
took him about 5 Super Bowls before people started believing that he's any good.
Of course. And with Mac Jones, he's in, I think, the best place. Maybe Zach Wilson might be in a pretty good one too. And Trevor Lawrence, when you get an offensive minded coach who really knows and how to develop quarterbacks in Doug Peterson, I think Trevor Lawrence is going to make a huge jump this year, or at least be in a position where he could. I don't know if he has the weapons. Trey Lance to be the number one guy.
They put him on the list as number one, the most likely to have a massive leap in 2022.
Well, yeah, because he wasn't very good in 2021.
So
I mean,
if you're down in the basement, then having a big jump maybe might not be that difficult to do.
I wouldn't be surprised if Zach Wilson has the best year out of all these guys.
Hey, that's promising.
I think
he's got a ton of weapons,
and they did a lot on defense too.
Which is massive.
I mean, they got better as a football team. Period.
And so having that jump, it's crazy to me that Trey Lance is number one on here, because he's the one that we don't know really anything about either. I feel like we've learned the least about Trey Lance than we have. Even I think Davis Mills proved himself more than even Trey Lance did, because we just didn't see him very often. When we did, he was definitely not good, and he looked like he was
Trey Lance
playing out of his boots a little bit. I mean, it was not his he did not know what he was doing.
He hardly played his last year of college, if you remember.
Yes.
So they're going off of past experience. He looked good in a lot of his workouts and stuff like that. And the 49ers, they saw something, you know, and whether they saw Patrick Mahomes or what they thought they saw was Patrick Mahomes and kind of wanted to make that bold move remains to be seen. I mean, part of the success of Patrick Mahomes is he had a lot of good people around him,
sure,
when he stepped in.
Yeah.
So, I'm a little reserved on Trey Lance. I'm not
haven't
sure.
seen enough, to be honest, but yeah. But there you go. Kyler Murray expects a contract extension similar to Derek Carr's, $40 million-ish a year. Is Kyler Murray on the level of Derek Carr? Is Derek Carr deserving of that money? I mean, at some point, Derek Carr got the money, so you go, well, then I guess he's worth it. But a guy asking for a contract extension after his rookie deal is done of $40 million plus, is he worth it? Do you throw that money at him if you're the Cardinals?
I think you have to ask yourself, it's not so much is he worth it, is Kyler Murray a guy you want to live with for the next 5 years, 7 years? I mean, is he your guy moving forward, or are you not quite convinced? If you remember, Sam Darnold was kind of in that similar situation and really didn't do enough to justify the team going, yeah, we're going to commit to this guy, because that second contract is kind of in that vein. I think he is, because I don't think this is like a monumental contract now. Like, I know it sounds crazy, like $40 million a year is not monumental.
But it is still top end of the league payment-wise. I mean, you're talking about
today.
Right, but that's what I'm saying.
I mean, it's kind of the going rate is what it is. It's not one of these.
Patrick Mahomes' contract looks less and less valuable. Like, as time goes, when he made that $500 million deal, Scott goes, you watch, this won't even be worth much in 5 years.
It was the first comment I had.
Here we are.
Yeah, and it'll just continue to be that way. The one I thought was monumental was Deshaun Watson.
The guaranteed.
Deshaun Watson had the Cleveland Browns over the barrel. That's really why he got that deal, because they had to do something, because they were like, we're a team that can win right now.
I think everybody assumed that they could kind of figure it out maybe for a minute with Baker Mayfield.
No, they did.
They were way more desperate.
But Baker Mayfield is kind of that same situation. Has Baker Mayfield in his same time frame done the same thing as Kyler Murray? And the answer is no. Not even close. Kyler Murray's been a much better player early on in his career than Baker Mayfield. And so it's a tough decision, but it's one that they make, and they I'll just tell you, Kyler Murray is right on the borderline. There's just a little bit about him that
Scott will give him $38 million.
I'm just a little nervous right now.
I know. I don't like the whole holding out kind of attitude.
Well, that made me nervous, and still, you know, he was doing really well, and then he just kind of tanked as the year went on, and they just looked terrible in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, all right, there you go. There's your NFL roundup. Man, NFL stories, even in the offseason, they get dramatic. It's fun. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. Got our two-minute drill around the corner. You don't want to miss it. Stay right here with us. Unrivaled continues, 97.5, 1280 The Zone, and The Zone Sports Network. Stay tuned.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the Unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback.
Louisiana!
And the other guy on 97.5 1280 The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
All right, welcome back. It's 97.5 1280 The Zone and The Zone Sports Network. And yes, you heard the voice. It's the NFL Roundup. We've got to get to the NFL Roundup here, Scott. So because you're the former NFL quarterback, that's what we use you for. Is that okay if we use you and abuse you today on this
topic? It's what we do every day. Yeah. I get used and abused every day, and that's life as
a
co-host.
You're the hired gun.
You know?
You're the hired gun, man.
That's what I do.
All right. So Scott's going to take on that role as he does every day. The NFL Roundup looks like this. Interesting little setup here about some of these quarterbacks that are going into their second year. And I don't know. Oh, boy. Jeremy snuck in Davis Mills. Should we allow that?
No.
Just because you're a Texans fan and because technically Davis Mills is going into his second year, do we need to talk about you? If a quarterback throws a pass in Houston and no one's around to see it, did it get thrown?
Well, no. Here's what happens in the NFL. There's this thing where there's this bias, right? It's an unconscious bias thing going on. And if you're on a really, really bad team,
right,
you have to validate yourself for about 7 years. So we'll get to Davis Mills in 7 years if he's actually.
We'll check in with him.
You know
what? Hold on. Yeah. Hey, Siri, set a reminder for 2029 to remember Davis Mills.
Perfect. All right, moving on.
Moving on. Okay, so second-year quarterbacks. I look at guys that had some success last year in that rookie group. I think we all just look at Mac Jones as kind of the guy who led that banner, right? I mean, he played for a team that had it together. He seemed to be in the system. What made his rookie year, you know, the mild success that it was? I mean, that's a team that probably outperformed what the expectations were. Do we just look at that and go, yeah, it's because it's Bill Belichick, or do we look at it and go, Mac Jones is a better value than what he was?
Well,
when he came
out of
college?
Where Mac Jones was is he was very consistent. So he was consistent in his performance a year ago, whether it's on a pretty decent Patriots team or whether it was with Bill Belichick and he just got great tutelage. He was the most consistent performer, which I think will actually be hard for him to improve on that. And it'll be hard because you have the Bills in the conference, and for Mac Jones now it's like winning the conference title and going and playing deep into the playoffs, kind of like Joe Burrow did. I don't know that he's there. I don't know that even the Patriots are there. These other guys like Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, Trey, all of them, Justin Field, they were all just erratic, up and down, up and down, up and down. And can they dial that in? It's hard to say. Zach Wilson has a lot of weapons now offensively. And quite frankly, of all these guys, he may be the one best poised to have a better year.
So the list that we're looking at here, they actually rank these quarterbacks by, you know, these second-year quarterbacks. And Justin Fields, according to CBS, their NFL reporters, say that Justin Fields is the least likely to be able to be successful. But part of that is because the Bears are going to be in a totally new situation here.
Still rebuilding, new coach.
The GM just
got
let go.
Again.
The guy who drafted. See, this is the thing. It's kind of interesting because the Jazz situation sort of comes back a little bit, where it's like, hey, the GM who drafted me
is not here.
Yeah. And does that make a difference? Where it's like, hey, you're not my guy.
No,
a complete
difference, because you have less patience for mistakes. You go, this wasn't my guy. I didn't draft him. It's not my thing.
Right.
So you're a lot quicker to go, I want to move on. I want to put my own stamp of approval on this. I want to make it happen. It's just funny. You hear all the things out of Chicago. We're going to make the offense quarterback friendly. We're going to make it easier on the quarterback. And what that sounds like is they don't really have a lot of confidence in their quarterback. You know, you never heard the Cincinnati Bengals go, we got to tone down our offense for Joe Burrow. You know, it just didn't happen.
So it was kind of interesting about Mac Jones, as we were just talking about this, is that one of the arguments they make is, and the guy who typed this article up, I always love, Chris Trapasso did this article, and he's pretty critical. And he said, I watched every Mac Jones drop back in 2022, and he might be the most overrated rookie quarterback in a long time. And I thought, well, that's pretty wild, because we just looked and said, I mean, at one point they were on a 7-game win streak, right, last year, and they go, well, this kid's got it going on, but if they really broke it down, which they do, they look at it and go, how much of an effect did he actually have on this thing? And the defense turned out to be way better than they thought. It ended up being a really, really good defense. And there were weapons around him that ended up making a lot of these plays too. But I don't know if I buy in him.
In a strong division. I mean, it's
if
not.
If you win 7 games in a row and you're a dang rookie, like, you can't just go, yeah, you're overrated, though. Other people helped you out.
A lot of people talk about his arm strength and
how it's not good.
And how it's not really good. Belichick isn't as big on arm strength. It's more where, you know, how accurate are you and how, you know, how good of an anticipator you are. I wouldn't be too oversold on Mac Jones. You think about talking about overrated quarterbacks. Tom Brady was the most overrated quarterback for years. It took Tom Brady about 5 Super Bowls before he stopped becoming overrated.
What?
I mean, people just, they just.
Because they just said, it's the system he's in. It's the talent he's surrounded by.
Yeah.
And that's so wild.
So I wouldn't
took him about 5 Super Bowls before people started believing that he's any good.
Of course. And with Mac Jones, he's in, I think, the best place. Maybe Zach Wilson might be in a pretty good one, too. And Trevor Lawrence, when you get an offensive minded coach who really knows and how to develop quarterbacks in Doug Peterson, I think Trevor Lawrence is going to make a huge jump this year, or at least be in a position where he could. I don't know if he has the weapons. Trey Lance to be the number one guy.
They put him on the list as number one, the most likely to have a massive leap in 2022.
Well, yeah, because he wasn't very good in 2021. So I mean,
if you're down in the basement, then having a big jump maybe might not be that difficult to do.
I wouldn't be surprised if Zach Wilson has the best year out of all these guys.
Hey, that's promising.
I think he's
got a ton of weapons,
and they did a lot on defense too.
Which is massive.
I mean, they got better as a football team. Period.
And so having that jump, it's crazy to me that Trey Lance is number one on here, because he's the one that we don't know really anything about either. I feel like we've learned the least about Trey Lance than we have. Even I think Davis Mills proved himself more than even Trey Lance did, because we just didn't see him very often. When we did, he was definitely not good, and he looked like he was
Trey Lance
playing out of his boots a little bit. I mean, it was not his he did not know what he was doing.
He hardly played his last year of college, if you remember.
Yes.
So they're going off of past experience. He looked good in a lot of his workouts and stuff like that. And the 49ers, they saw something, and whether they saw Patrick Mahomes or what they thought they saw was Patrick Mahomes and kind of wanted to make that bold move remains to be seen. I mean, part of the success of Patrick Mahomes is he had a lot of good people around him when he stepped in.
Yeah.
So, I'm a little reserved on Trey Lance. I'm not sure.
Haven't seen enough, to be honest. But there you go. Kyler Murray expects a contract extension similar to Derek Carr's, $40 million-ish a year. Is Kyler Murray on the level of Derek Carr? Is Derek Carr deserving of that money? I mean, at some point, Derek Carr got the money, so you go, well, then I guess he's worth it. But a guy asking for a contract extension after his rookie deal is done of $40 million plus, is he worth it? Do you throw that money at him if you're the Cardinals?
I think you have to ask yourself, it's not so much is he worth it, is Kyler Murray a guy you want to live with for the next 5 years, 7 years? I mean, is he your guy moving forward, or are you not quite convinced? If you remember, Sam Darnold was kind of in that similar situation and really didn't do enough to justify the team going, yeah, we're going to commit to this guy, because that second contract is kind of in that vein. I think he is, because I don't think this is like a monumental contract now. Like, I know it sounds crazy, like $40 million a year is not monumental.
But it is still top end of the league payment-wise. I mean, you're talking about
today.
Right, but that's what I'm saying.
I mean, it's kind of the going rate is what it is. It's not one of these.
Patrick Mahomes' contract looks less and less valuable. As time goes, when he made that $500 million deal, Scott goes, you watch, this won't even be worth much in 5 years.
It was the first comment I had.
Here we are.
Yeah, and it'll just continue to be that way. The one I thought was monumental was Deshaun Watson.
The guaranteed.
Deshaun Watson had the Cleveland Browns over the barrel. That's really why he got that deal, because they had to do something, because they were like, we're a team that can win right now.
I think everybody assumed that they could kind of figure it out maybe for a minute with Baker Mayfield.
No, they did.
They were way more desperate.
But Baker Mayfield is kind of that same situation. Has Baker Mayfield in his same time frame done the same thing as Kyler Murray? And the answer is no, not even close. Kyler Murray's been a much better player early on in his career than Baker Mayfield. And so it's a tough decision, but it's one that they make, and they I'll just tell you, Kyler Murray is right on the borderline. There's just a little bit about him that
Scott will give him $38 million.
I'm just a little nervous right now.
I know I don't like the whole holding out kind of attitude.
Well, that made me nervous, and still, he was doing really well, and then he just kind of tanked as the year went on, and they just looked terrible in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, all right. There you go. Here's your NFL roundup. Man, NFL stories, even in the offseason, they get dramatic. It's fun. We'll take the break here. We'll come back. Got our two-minute drill around the corner. You don't want to miss it. Stay right here with us. Unrivaled continues. 97.5, 1280, The Zone, and The Zone Sports Network. Stay tuned.
Your home for the best coverage of the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, and Aggies.
Y'all ready?
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery.
It's our show, all right?
On 97.5, 1280, The Zone. Powered by KSLSports.com.
Yeah, welcome back. It's Unrivaled, 97.5, 1280, The Zone, and The Zone Sports Network. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Wrapping the show up on another lovely day. Hey, earlier in the show, we talked to David Locke. Look, I don't mind talking about Look, David can talk about anything, by the way.
Yes.
And it'll probably be interesting, and he'll probably have done at least some level of investigative legwork on it. So it's good. I like having Locke on when he does that stuff. If you missed our conversation with David Locke, we included NIL, mental health stuff. We included all sorts of crazy conversations. We talked, I think, at the front end of it, we were chatting about what the future of conference championships looks like, which has been the big story of the day, of course. Let's jump in here, Scott, to this one. Did you see that, speaking of awkward, when we were talking about roasts, awkward roasts that we could have had, I think you threw out Baker Mayfield, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Baker Mayfield would have been, it's an awkward roast to have right now, which is when you want to, when something is at its peak awkwardness, you want to have the roast right then. And right now, Baker Mayfield says he's moving his football camp that he's been having on a yearly basis from Ohio back to Oklahoma. So he's going back to Oklahoma. What is that? I mean, that's just him moving his entire life away from the Browns, right? Even though he's going to be part of the Browns organization.
Here's the thing that happens to you.
Can't imagine anybody less unplugged right now from a team who's actually still being paid by that team.
Here's the thing that happens. There are people in your life that are going to love you no matter what. And those are the ones you hold the dearest to your heart. And you're going to have people that are going to love you because you're famous, because you're whatever, you have something to give them, and they're going to drop you
in a second.
Mm-hmm. But the people that really love you and really care about you are in Norman, Oklahoma, or wherever. And those are the people that you always take care of, you never forget, and you always rely on in the times that are challenging and the times that are good, and the rest of them you just kind of ignore.
Hear all that, folks?
That's all this is about.
So who are those people that are in that second category that Scott was talking about? Hang out with them more. Who are the people in the first category that will drop you in a second? Hang out with them less.
Or not even at all.
Or at all. There's your life lesson today. Brought to you by Scott Mitchell. There you go. See? Love it. All right. We'll see you tomorrow. Scott? Thirsty Thursday tomorrow. What is it?
Throwback Thursday. Right, everyone knows this. TBT.
We'll be back again.
Throwback Thursday.
Jeremy, our producer. Alex, Scott Mitchell. We'll see you tomorrow. 97.5, 1280, The Zone.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.